Well, good evening and welcome. It's Brian Noonan in for Nick DiGilio. Nick is taking the rest of the week off. I am excited to be able to spend some time with you as we are in the midst of, I hesitate to keep using troubled times and unusual times. We've heard it on every commercial, but these are very unusual and troubling times. I am happy to be able to spend some of that with you to give you a voice. 312-981-7200. You are welcome to call all night. We will be here until 4 o'clock. I am looking forward to speaking to you, finding out what you're going through. We have some great guests coming up. We're going to talk to one of them in just a second. After midnight, we're going to talk to Don Flesch, the owner of Central Camera. I know if you've been following the news at all, you saw what happened to Central Camera the other night. And then at 1 o'clock, we're going to try to pull back and get a little sense of normalcy about us. We're going to talk to our good friend Tom Appel about cars all through the night. If you want to talk to one of these guests, if you have a question for me, if you just want to vent about whatever you're feeling as we go through this, 312-981-7200. It's about you. It's about me. It's about us. It's about us all getting through this together. We've been watching the footage over the last few nights, tonight included, about the protest, the riots, the combination of both of those things. One man who was on the street for all of it was Bob Chirito. He is a contributor for Black Club Chicago, and he joins us now on WGN. Bob, good to talk to you. Thanks for taking some time.
Hi, Brian. Thank you.
So, all right, you were out there last night. You were out there today. For those of us who have only seen it from a distance and separated from all of this by our TV screens, what's it like on the streets?
Well, it's really unreal. It is kind of like a movie. I will say one thing. Sometimes I think for people who aren't there, they might assume that the whole city's burning or the whole city is being looted, and that's not the case. Thankfully, but there are a lot of places that are being looted and really destroyed.
So when you were down there, did it seem like it was just the protesters who had started out the day? We've heard different reports that maybe there were organized elements that were coming in. We saw footages of cars and U-Haul trucks lining up outside of places. Did you get any sense of that as you were in the middle of it?
I got a sense that it was kind of a mix. I don't believe that most, if any, of the looters really cared about the protest. A lot of them weren't at the protest, came later. And as far as coming from other cities, I think there was some of that. There's also looters and people doing destructive things from right here in various neighborhoods. So I think it's not one or the other. It's a combination.
Now, you've covered a lot of different stories for Block Club Chicago and throughout your career. Was there any time where you felt scared? I was watching, and it seemed, you know, reporters, their job is to be kind of dispassionate and just an observer. But every once in a while, you could tell, hey, they're also people, and they don't like being surrounded by this. We saw reports today of a cameraman from WGN or Channel 7 being pushed down. Did you ever feel any sort of fear or dread while you were out there?
No, surprisingly, I felt a little apprehensive before I went. Once I was there, I felt fine. I didn't face any problems at all. I've covered a lot of stuff over the years here in Chicago, including a lot of homicides. So I've never had an issue in any neighborhood, anywhere. Luckily, you know, I guess that could always change,
yeah.
But no, I wasn't worried. People didn't seem to have an issue with me. I did have on my jacket, you know, it's pretty clear that I'm press.
Okay.
I don't look like a cop, I don't believe. So that might help.
Well, it was pretty easy. It's been pretty easy to identify the police during all this. They're the ones with the powdered blue helmets or the, the tactical gear. So if you're not wearing that,
thing. I don't want to look like a police officer, and I don't want to look like a rioter either.
Right.
So, yeah.
So you left your black hoodie and backpack at home?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
That's probably smart. So since we're talking about the police, it seemed as if in some areas the police were hanging back. That was part of the strategy to let people go. How did you observe their behavior while in the spots that you were at?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting last night. I was in Inglewood. I was on the west side, and then I was in Inglewood for most of the night till about 2 in the morning. And the police really seemed like they wanted to talk to me a lot, and they did. And they were outmanned. They were complaining that they didn't have resources, and they couldn't really make arrests. The reason why was because in Inglewood, there was a group of 15 police officers being shuttled from hotspot to hotspot on a CTA bus driven by a bus driver.
Why were they taking the bus? I don't like to take the bus when there's not a riot
yeah.
going on.
Well,
why
they
would they want to take the
bus? Didn't have any, that they lost so many cars to the destructive actions that they didn't have the police cars available. And so they told me, you know, we're being bussed. We go to the scene, we scare them away, and that's really about it. We don't even make arrests because where are we going to take them, you know?
Yeah, everybody going to get on the bus together?
Yeah, exactly. It was pretty sad. And then on the west side, officers were sharing radios because they didn't have enough radios. Now, it was really pretty disheartening.
As you're talking to the officers on the street, was the department not prepared for this? It would seem that last statement, they don't have enough radios. You have X amount of officers on the CPD. There should be X amount of radios to, you know, to match with every
yeah,
officer.
You know, I'm not sure. I think that a lot of things will have to be examined. It's hard to play Monday morning quarterback, especially while it's still going on. But I think that everyone, they're going to have to take a hard look at the preparation. And I mean, this started in Minnesota, a few days before it started here. So you would think that they'd be aware that this was a possibility of happening.
Bob Chirito is my guest. He is a contributor for Block Club Chicago. We're going to continue talking to Bob in just a minute. If you have any questions or any thoughts, 312-981-7200. That's how you get a hold of me. It's Brian Noonan in for Nick. Nick is taking the rest of the week off. I will be spending time with you for the next few nights, 312-981-7200. If you want to get involved in the conversation, I would love to talk to you. Talking now to Bob Chirito. He is a contributor for Block Club Chicago. We were talking, Bob was covering the riots last night, and he was out today. And you said, Bob, that you were talking to a lot of police officers. What was the vibe you got from them about this whole thing, starting from George Floyd's murder in Minneapolis to what's going on now? How were the men and women who were out on the street dealing with this and feeling about this?
Well, I think, you know, it varies from officer to officer, but they did seem, the ones I talked to seemed to be all united that, you know, what happened to George Floyd was totally out of line and a murder. There's no really other way to describe it. And you know, they seemed a little confused and dumbfounded why an officer would, put their knee into somebody's neck. So they agreed about that. As for the chaos that's ensued, I mean, I think they feel sad about it. I mean, I was talking to officers last night in Inglewood, and they were telling me about, one of the food places, Nick's, was looted and basically destroyed. And, you know, they said nothing is sacred to these guys. And they just took out one of the places that the community there really relies on for meals. Yeah. It's really sad.
It's horrible, and you see people's dreams completely demolished in front of your eyes. Now, you were out there, you were surveying a lot of the damage. We see today, you know, there were efforts in all different, in Inglewood, there were efforts all over the city of people coming together and helping these small businesses clean up. But cleaning up the glass on the sidewalk is just the first baby step in coming back. As you're talking to these business owners, what are they, I can only imagine what they're feeling.
Yeah, I think a lot of them are kind of in shock, to be honest. I don't know if some of these corporate stores, it seems like every family dollar in town has been destroyed, or at least a lot on the south and west sides. And,
yeah.
And those are areas where there are food deserts, and those are corporate stores. So I don't know if the corporation is going to make the decision to come back or not. And it's even sadder for the independent stores who, like you said, have worked their whole lives to build a business, and now it's gone in minutes. You know, one guy, he's an Egyptian native. He owns a store downtown on the 100 block of West Illinois called Tuts. And he's had a horrible time. He had it's a little convenience store, and he's been suffering because of COVID, because his business has been way down. His wife went to Egypt to visit family 2 months ago, and she's been stuck there because of travel restrictions. And now she's going to come home to see that their family business has been destroyed. I mean, talk about a run of bad luck.
Yeah, and it's not like there was anything that any of these business owners could control. As you mentioned, first it's COVID, so now their business is down, and now they're hit with this. As you talk to some of them, and obviously, again, this is going to differ from owner to owner, are they coming back? Did some of them say, you know what, this is the last straw? I was already hurting, and now everything's gone, so I'm folding up my tent and going home. What?
I haven't heard that anyone said I'm giving up or not coming back. Most seem like they don't know what the hell they're going to do. I do know Central Camera, who you're having on later tonight, mm-hmm. that they are going to rebuild and come back, and they have a GoFundMe account for that to help them out, and that's great because that place has been around since 1899, and it's a Chicago institution. I hope these places come back. I hope the insurance companies don't give them a hard time. And I hope this destruction stops. It's still going on right now.
It is going on now. It's when you were out, did you talk to any of the rioters or the protesters?
Well, I talked to the protesters during the day, but that was a different thing.
Yeah, no, okay, explain the difference. So you were out there, and we hear there was a difference. We see footage that there was a difference. What were you hearing from the protesters during the day who seemed more organized, that it was focused on the message? What were they saying?
Well, I mean, their concerns are, institutional racism and the murder of George Floyd, to be specific. They have legitimate issues, and I think that's something we can talk about for days.
Oh, yeah.
And then a lot of times it seemed like later these other people would show up who were not part of the protest. Frankly, I don't think half these looters know who the hell George Floyd is. I did see different faces and races. I think the one common thing that I would say is that they were on the younger side. So if maybe they're teenage to early 20s, okay. for the most part. And as to whether they're from Chicago or elsewhere, I would say what I saw was a combination. So,
and was there, other than sunset being a trigger, which we know in the past has always led things to change up, was there a moment where you saw it where you thought, oh, things have changed? This has gone from protest A to protest B/riot.
Well, I would say sunset had more to do with it on Saturday when it happened downtown. Yesterday, it was a free-for-all all day. And, it just got worse as the day went on. But daylight didn't matter. So, the police are a little shorthanded. I think that's one factor. And I think, frankly, even police told me, we don't even know what they're going to charge these guys with. If they're just stealing a pair of shoes, if you're setting something on fire, that's pretty, that's a major crime. If you're just running in and stealing a pair of shoes, they may just let them go in the long run.
It didn't seem like there was a lot of hurry up in a lot of these looters. It was very casual. As I was watching last night, this morning.
It was interesting. On Saturday, it was definitely downtown, definitely hurry up. I mean, they were sprinting inside, grabbing whatever they could, and running out. Yesterday, it was especially later in the evening. I mean, it was just basically they were browsing, you know, and taking what they wanted. The only sense of urgency seemed to be to get their pick of what they wanted. There was no sense of urgency about being arrested or anything like that.
Now, we know the business district here in downtown Chicago is closed off. I ran trying to get to work tonight. I made the acquaintance of some National Guardsmen who were very nice, trying to tell me, you know, what streets I could take. How long has the mayor said how long that is going to last, and how long the National Guard will be near the bridges and keeping people out of the downtown district?
I don't believe so. I don't think that decision's been made because, I mean, frankly, I don't think anyone knows how long it's going to take until this stops.
Yeah, I thought maybe, you know, with the weekend ending, it would slow down today, but it has not. It's just moved to different areas. We're getting reports from all over the region that things are not good. So where will they have you tomorrow, Bob? What are you going to be out on at another protest?
Yeah, most likely. I'm pretty lucky where I can kind of go where I want, so I'll make the decision in the morning and then tomorrow night, and we'll see. But it'll be somewhere in the city.
All right. Well, stay safe out there. Good to talk to you, and people can read you on Block Club Chicago. They can also follow you on Twitter at RJ Chiarito. That's Chiarito. Bob, good to talk to you. Stay safe. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you, Brian.
Take care. Yeah, it's crazy. Things are popping off all over. They're still going on. There was things moved out into the suburbs again. We got reports from Naperville. Of course, Aurora last night was a hot spot. Cicero today, a rough spot. 312-981-7200. Now I want to hear from you. We've been going through this all weekend. How are you coping with it? Are you afraid? Do you live downtown where, as you know, some people I know, the protests were right outside their house? And the police were right outside their house. Have you tried to go to the store today and things were closing early because people were afraid? I want to hear from you. That's why we're here, to talk to each other and make it through. So 312-981-7200. We're going to take a quick break. Then Scott's hanging on in Florida. We'll get to Scott and we'll get to you right after this. 720 WGN. It's Brian Noonan in for Nick. I will be here the rest of the week. Nick just taking a few days off. He will be back with you later on, but I am here with you this week. Very excited to be here. Tom Hush, the executive producer. When you call in at 312-981-7200, you will be talking to Tom. Be nice to him. You'll get to me. That's how it works. We're experiencing things that we have never experienced before, some of us. Some of us haven't experienced it in a long time. We've got a pandemic. We've got riots. We've got protests. Everything is happening. I know you're feeling something, whether you're looking out your window now and seeing protesters and police presence, whether you are a business owner that lost everything or are afraid that maybe the protests tomorrow will come your way, or you're just somebody who's scared, frustrated, angry, whatever you are, I want to talk to you. 312-981-7200. Tom is in Harvard. Hi, Tom. Welcome to WGN.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing great, man. Unfortunately, the country isn't. I want to talk about what racism is a little bit in my mind. It isn't something we are born with. It's something that we are taught by our parents, you know, and
parents or society, or it is a learned behavior. Definitely. I agree with you 100%.
I think a lot of it is directly from our parents. My dad's from Alabama. He came up here with the Alabama influx during the 50s and made a fortune. And we actually moved to Alabama for a few years, but my mother from Oak Park didn't like Alabama, even though I fit in and stuff. And we moved back to Illinois. And in any event, I was born in Chicago. We lived in Chicago. I myself have lived in Chicago. My brother has lived in Chicago. But what I'm disappointed is that our mayor the mayor of Chicago and our governor have been so supportive of minorities and the vandalism that happened, you know, and I understand the anger. I don't understand, why would you vandalize our city, you know? Why would you do that, you know? And I think a lot of it is outsiders that, you know, even my girlfriend's...
I was going to say, who's yelling at you in the background, Tom?
she's my old lady. We've both been divorced twice, so we don't want to get married. Well, she's been widowed once, so we're just kind of hanging out for the last 10 years.
I love that term. Does she mind when you call her your old lady? That's a term that you don't really hear too much anymore.
She's a biker broad.
Oh, so she's good with it. She doesn't mind being an old lady.
I'm talking to WGN Radio.
Hey, WGN.
She listens to you guys down in her car.
Very
you know,
nice.
That coronavirus just totally destructed our livelihood, but we're old folks and we know how to live within our means. So
what did you do? What did you do for a living, or what? How did it take away your life?
Restaurant business.
Oh yeah. If you own a restaurant, yeah. Work at a restaurant.
Yeah, she does, and she's and I do cleanup for them and stuff like that. I'm retired, you know. I got no hips. I'm 58 years old, and she's 52, and she's an artist, and so we've been living within our means for a long time.
Yeah,
you know. And so, and we kind of isolate anyhow because, you know, she got 10 grandkids and
holy cow,
you know, yeah. And five, she had four kids. How many kids you got? Five, you know, so, I mean, you know, so it's been rough, but we've all been doing well. And, but it's a shame that people took things out on saying bad things about Governor Pritzker, because he inherited it. What a mess. And Mayor Lightfoot, she always sticks up for the minorities, considering she is one. And, you know, I could understand protests in Minnesota, that, you know, because that's what actually happened.
Well, I think I get it. I understand that too, Tom. And I think what it is those kind of incidents happen all over.
Yeah.
It was the flashpoint of Minnesota coming off a couple other recent incidents, one from Georgia and one from Tennessee, I believe.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It was the match that lit the fire.
Yeah,
and
so
I can understand it all. I do. And you know what? Peaceful protests have been going on for years. Now people have taken notice. I just going to say this, my last word. Vote blue in November.
All right, Tom. Take care, you and the old lady. Have a good rest of the night, and we'll talk again. Take care, man.
All right, man.
Take care. It's 312-981-7200. I'd love to hear from you if you were in Naperville tonight, if you were in Aurora, if you were up on the north side where the protests were tonight, how you found it to be in your neighborhood. I know there was reports of some looting going on in Naperville. Things seem to be a little bit calmer up on the north side. There was a heavy police presence and a big protester presence, but it seemed to be winding down earlier. But if you were in those neighborhoods, I would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. It is a difficult time, and we're all being affected by it in different ways. If you're lucky enough to have not had things come to your neighborhood, and you've just been watching things on TV, then you probably feel one way. If you're in the midst of it, you definitely feel another way. And if you're a business owner who lost everything over the last few days, I can't imagine what you're going through. But if you want to share that, I would love to hear from you and get some different perspective. Because as somebody who's not a business owner, we can only surmise what that might be like. Terry is in Lakeview. He's been hanging on. Let's see. Oh, nope. Not ready to go, I don't think. Tom, is Terry up? Tom is very busy. Yeah? Because all I'm seeing is I'm seeing red dots. We're good? Hi, Terry.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Good. Hey, I just wanted to make a real quick comment. I don't want to stir the pot beyond the way it's already been stirred, but I do believe the national media, particularly cable news shows, probably on both sides, have stirred the pot unnecessarily by, I believe, misrepresenting what's going on when people can kind of see with their own eyes on TV what's going on. But I want to talk.
In what way, Terry? I just want, like, if you can give me an example.
Well, by continuing to characterize looters and rioters and destroyers of businesses as protesters. I can see with my own eyes what a protest is and what a riot is.
Right.
But I just want to talk very quickly. I'm not going to dwell on it, but there was a column today in the Tribune by Darlene Glanton, the headline of which said, "White people, if you want to know who's responsible for racism, look in the mirror."
Yes.
I didn't read the column because I was afraid I would throw my phone across the room. A friend of mine did, and he said it was about what you would expect. Another column today by Phil Kadner in the Sun-Times had a headline that said, Because white people lack empathy, black people continue to die. So I guess I'm wondering, what contribution specifically does that make to quelling racial tensions? I believe it is no contribution, and I believe the intent is just the opposite. They want to stir the pot. And I don't understand. Can you shed some light on why in this time, I understand the impulse by those writers to write those columns? Why on God's green earth would the Tribune or the Sun-Times decide to publish them at this particular time?
Well, I did read the Darlene Glanton column today. And, Terry, this is just my opinion. I don't know. I did read it, and it was a difficult column to read because I have a feeling you're the same way. We don't think we're racist. We don't go out of our way to keep people down or do horrible things to people or say ugly things to people. We try to live a decent life, right? You're out there doing the best you can. What the column was saying was, listen, it's not really enough for you and I to do that. It's what she was saying, and I may be misrepresenting it, but this is what I took from it, is, listen, it's not just enough now to be the kind of guy like you are, Terry, or I am, or anybody else, and not be actively racist. We have to take responsibility, according to this column, for what has happened till now, and we have to be more active in fighting it. I think that's what she was going for. I didn't, like I said, it was a difficult read until I stepped back and tried to think about it a little and went, all right, she's not talking right to me. She's talking in general that, listen, there's good people out there who need to accept that this is an uncomfortable thing. Nobody likes to talk about race. Nobody likes to admit that things are bad. But it is time for, in her words, white people to say, listen, things are awful. We need to be more active. That's just what I took from it. And everybody who reads it is going to take something different from it. But Terry, since you asked me, that was my opinion on it.
Okay, I appreciate that, Brian. It's probably very accurate. But I guess what frustrates me is I personally don't know what I can do to be better, quote unquote, is what we keep hearing.
Right.
And when I keep hearing from people in the media or politics, say, or celebrities, we all need to do better. And I ask myself, okay, I don't live in those communities. I don't have any real direct impact on anything. And it seems like when people say we all need to do better, they're talking about white people. And I wonder at what point is the black community going to at least nominally, marginally, own at least a small piece of where we are?
Well, these are the tough questions, Terry, that unfortunately I wish I had the answers, because if I did, who knows where I'd be, but it'd be somewhere crafting public policy and making these changes. But they're worthwhile questions, and I don't know, but I do appreciate your call. Let's take a quick break. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump into the conversation. It's Brian Noonan in for Nick, 720 WGN. Wow, it's all Steely Dan all the time. Brian Noonan in for Nick. Nick is taking the rest of the week off. I will be with you all week. 312-981-7200 is how you join in the conversation, and we hope you do. Don't forget, when you call in, you'll be talking to Tom. If you're nice to him, you get to me. I'm excited to talk to our next guest Unfortunately, not for the reasons that we are talking to him tonight, Don Flesch is the owner of Central Camera that is located on South Wabash in Chicago, and it is a business that is historic in this town, and unfortunately, things did not go very well on Saturday, and that is probably the biggest understatement I have ever made. Don, welcome to WGN. Thanks for taking time this morning. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you very much, sir.
So, as I mentioned, Saturday night was I can't imagine how horrible a night it was when you stood and watched Central Camera, a business that has been in your family, that your grandfather founded since 1899, being looted and burned. Can you give us a little sense of what it was like to stand there, and then we'll get on to some happier remembrances. But it was
Certainly. I sat across from the store in front of DePaul University. I didn't want to be close to the front door, because if my anger rose, which it didn't, I wouldn't allow that. But hey, this is my only job. I've had it all my life.
Yeah.
The only one. And I'm halfway to 144 at this point. So I've had a lot of fun working at the store. I love the store. Love the people. Love what it does. Pictures. What do? They last forever.
Yeah.
So I wasn't angry. After a soft moment had passed, I was sad that the reason for people on the street was being ignored. And what it stood for was to help in sympathy for this poor man who died, Mr. Floyd. And it's all Black Lives Matter. And all other people's lives matter, too. But this... I watched and I reasoned to a certain extent what was happening, and people were stealing.
Yeah.
Why were they stealing? I don't know. What were they going to gain from stealing?
See,
how was it going to help them?
You know? I don't. And you say that, Don, and you say you weren't angry, and that's an emotion. You're a better man than I am, to be honest, because if...
Well, we don't know each other well enough to get to that conclusion, sir.
Well, I'm sure I can tell you this much. That part is true, but I can tell you I would have been angry.
I wasn't angry, no. Anger, I don't know, doesn't solve anything for me.
Yeah.
No. And moving forward, I don't want to have yesterday control my present.
Yeah, that is a perfect sentiment, because in order to move on, you have to put all that behind you. And all the, you know, as all the good things that came before shouldn't be, and all the good stuff that will come after, I guess, can't be defined by one horrible moment.
Exactly. We do that enough in our daily lives, listening to the radio, not you, listening to television, and listening to the man in the White House. It's enough.
We are, yeah, we're all going through a lot, that is for sure. Now, I have to ask you, because we know from, I saw your interview on Channel 2 the other night, and I've read Dave Hoekstra's wonderful piece about you. I know you were able to get the first camera that your grandfather ever sold. Were you
yeah.
there before things turned bad? When were you able to get into the shop?
Well, we got a notification, or I did, from the alarm system, a nice company called Early Warning on West Tui. And they talked to me the first time at 1 minute after 9 p.m.
Okay.
And then within the next 5-6 minutes, there were another 5 or 6 hits to our security system. And the last one was that our security system going down to our basement had been triggered. Well, now I know people for sure in the store.
Yeah.
I leave. I get downtown. I can't go anywhere east and west, but it's blocked. I finally get to a block west of the federal building on Jackson. Park the car. Go. Have my camera. Go. At Dearborn, I run into 10 or 12 policemen who are with their own thoughts, I guess, but I ask them, what about my car? Sir, I wouldn't leave it there. Maybe it'll be a smashed window when you get, or maybe it won't be there. Or maybe some, I said, I have to go try and find out what's happening within my business. I walk on across the street, and more policemen. Another block, I'm at Jackson and Wabash on the west side. I cross the street. I don't want to be physically in front of the store. And I go and sit, lean against the, what's it called? I took with me a heavy umbrella, thinking that if I had to defend myself, or if I wanted to be on the offense, because I would be angry,
Then
I said, how stupid is that, I said. Let something like that control me.
Right.
I sat and watched, took pictures. But they were looting at that point. If 100 people or so walked in front of the store, 80 went into the store.
Oh, geez.
80 came out carrying things. One thing, two things. Some man had his shirt out of his pants in front of him, like a pocket, and he had things in there, so he was carrying more than he could carry in two hands. That's how that was. I assume, having heard out and figured out what was taken from our store the next day, that if we had, for example, 800 cameras and lenses, we now had 20.
Oh, my God.
What was the condition of those because of the situation? So I figure that the robbery or the attack on the store, and they pulled back the gate with crowbars, not where the locks were, but on the other side, because there were three sections to the gate. They took the one in front of the door, worked on the left-hand side, yanked it back, busted through the door, busted the windows, stole from there, busted the other one, busted the door, and boom, they're in. So I figure that happened 7:30. I don't know when the protest turned into violence or to the attacks. I'm not sure of that time schedule. But no one, while I was watching, because the fire started maybe another 35 minutes later, and all that was coming out from the fire was this tremendous black smoke just billowing out, and then the people were moving away.
Yeah.
I called the fire department. They finally came right on time. I couldn't get them right away. I called a friend who's a policewoman. She lives in Hyde Park, Joanne. I had to leave a message because she was probably busy what was going on. And the fire department came approximately 5-6 minutes later. 7 trucks, 8 trucks came in. All those people got off. Another 15-20 trucks came. And then there must have been 100 firemen. They then went to the front door, pulled the gate back. We ripped it off to a certain extent. These three guys laid in front of the door and hosed in different directions, in a sense. Some to the left, some to the right. Some went 30 feet, some went 60 feet, some went 90 feet, depending on pressure. And that was the way they were trying to, if the fire was where they were shooting, hey, they were going to knock it out with heavy water pressure. They did that water pressure for over 3.5 hours.
Jeez.
Almost 4. Finally, I don't know, after they started that, how do we get in other places? I showed them, I explained, I felt like I was a tracker.
Yeah.
Leading them to the back in the alley, leading to the side of the door, how to break through this one, you know.
Now,
and they ended up, we found out later that the fire was in the basement.
And what was down? What kind of thing? We'll continue with that. I got to take a quick break, Don. But Don Flesch is my guest. He is the owner of Central Camera. A GoFundMe account has been set up. Central Camera Company Rebuild. You can go there and pledge to help this business. After we finish talking about what happened on Saturday, the history of your place is phenomenal. We'll get into that. And if you have any questions for Don or a memory of a camera that you bought from Central Camera, 312-981-7200. We'll do all of that right after this. It's 720 WGN. Brian Noonan for Nick D, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. That's how you get a hold of us. I am happy to be talking to Don Flesch. He is the owner of Central Camera, 230 South Wabash, which unfortunately on Saturday night was one of the targets of looters. It was looted, and then there was a fire. And Don, you were just telling us the fire department had gotten there. Now, I'm interested. You said you were able to save the first camera that your grandfather sold when he opened the business in 1899. Was that still intact when you got in there after the fire department?
I didn't get into the store, Ryan. What happened, it was in the window.
Okay.
We have a south window and a north. I had put it in the window years ago in the corner, in the front trying to block the sun, because once the sun rises and goes past the buildings that are east of us and they get to the 10 o'clock, 10:30 range, now the sun is bursting onto that whole window for, what, 2.5, 3 hours?
Yeah.
I wanted people to see it. My dad had written a little ticket that said, first camera sold, 1899. Wow. So what did I do? There was a gentleman who works for, you know, a fire department, and he was in a special, different color suit, and he was trying to keep pedestrians like me away.
Yeah.
Because if I got hurt, who's to blame? The fire department.
Yep.
But slowly, over a period of an hour, I got a little closer, backed away, talked to him for a sec. Finally, at a moment when I was fairly, fairly close to that corner, and the glass was all busted out.
Ugh.
So I knew I could reach in. We looked at each other for a moment. I said, and I pointed over and said, what's that over there? And he turned it down. I reached my hand and grabbed the camera, pulled it back out. He says, what do you mean? I don't see anything. Oh, I must have made a mistake. Boom. I saved Grandpa's camera. That was the most important part of the history for me.
Yeah.
Early things, because I didn't know my grandpa. He died in 1933 at 56 years old.
Wow. So this was definitely not only a piece of business history, but a piece of family history.
So exactly.
Was there anything else? I know when on Sunday when you were finally able to go in, was there anything else like that that was salvageable?
Yes. Grandpa's first sign was a brass 2-inch tall, about 10 inches long, with a little foot in the back to make it stand up, just saying Central Camera Company.
Wow.
And that I found where I put it. When you walk in our door, our window on the south, it was in a little ledge sitting there. Then I remembered, the one I like also, a little bit taller, brass in the front window where people could see it when they walked past, that photographs live forever.
Wow. And those had been untouched. They were left.
They were left. Then I walked into the store and I found some framed images of the store and little statements and things like that. But the next thing that I found that had been ripped down, the Art Institute of Chicago had 150th year anniversary of photography, 1839-1889. And they had a saying, 150th year anniversary of photography, and they had a check photographer's picture up above. Unfortunately, that man didn't know that his picture was chosen. He died 2 months before the announcement. Wonderful photographer right now. I forget his name.
Yeah.
That was given to me by the curator of photography, David Travis, who's retired now. Hyde Parker.
See, and those are the kind of things that even if insurance will cover a loss of some things, but those kind of memories can never be replaced. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what happens.
They're just in your mind when you can't have them for real. You know, and how do I explain my mind to you or the next person what it felt like? Because that was 10 feet long, and we used to have a company that came and changed our light bulbs. Well, the light bulbs are hanging from the ceiling, which is 25 feet over the store's floor, and the light fixtures were another 3 feet, and then this thing was hanging down, but it wouldn't clobber anybody in the head. Well, we had one guy who was like 7 feet tall, so when he came through, he had to bend down. One of Dad's customers in the 50s was the tallest man in the world with the circus.
He was
8'6". Yeah, he was with Barnum and Bailey. So he was there. I didn't see it, but Dad told me, and he'd come in often, but he had the shortest man in the world with him, the midget. So when you walk into this guy bent down probably like he was doing the push-ups, but he got in, he got through. Along our lights in the back where the men stood or any salesman stood were ledges. They were clean. So the little guy was tossed up to the ledge like he was a light bag of something. And he walked around and had fun while Dad talked to the other gentleman about his needs. Then he jumped back down. They walked out. Boom.
That's amazing.
Sammy Davis used to come a lot.
Who did?
Wonderful.
Oh, Sammy Davis?
Right. Dad had
Gary, not Gary Cooper. Who's the other one that's wonderful that looked like him?
Like Gary Cooper.
I can't think. Well, he would, his Gary, people would call, what?
I wanted to say Cary Grant, but I don't
think.
That's it. It is Cary Grant. Okay.
Cary Grant, people would call up early and, you know, or the day before and say, Mr. Grant wants to come in, wants to talk to you, Mr. Fletch, but doesn't want to be around other people. When can he come in? 7 o'clock, 7:30. So he'd come in. He did that a few times. But there were a lot of others and nice people. Everybody's a nice person, right? Photography makes everybody smile.
I think ears, so.
You know, their ears get touched by their smiles.
Well, let's go back and talk about how this all started, because you've been in the 230 South Wabash location since what, 1929. But your grandfather actually came over. Tell us his story. How did he decide to come over and start a camera company?
We're Jewish. Grandpa lived in Hungary near the Romanian border. In that time of year, Grandpa was born in 1878. There was a location where 9 or 10 countries and policies. One of the policies was a Jewish boy, when he hit 13, the day after, he went into the army for 25 years.
Whoa.
Right. The Austrian-Hungarian coalition or something. So his father, his name was Joseph. Joseph said, and Albert was the oldest son.
Okay.
And the oldest child, in fact. You got to get out of here. That's not the exact words. It was in Hungarian or Yiddish or whatever, you know.
But that was the gist.
Grandpa Albert started a diary. I'm sorry, I interrupted. What?
Oh, no, I said, but that was the gist. He told him he had to get out of there.
You got to leave, otherwise you're going to die. Why? So this little Jewish kid who was 13 years old, they put him in the front line when there was a war or a battle.
Ugh.
That's how they thinned out the Jewish population. You have no sperm, you can't make babies. Get rid of the men.
Yeah.
So he then walks. He starts his diary that day, and he walks from where he lives to Milan or Venice, whichever one is on the what do you call it, the East Coast. I think it's Venice.
Okay.
He catches a ship, goes to Ellis Island. They don't change the name. It's Flesch, F-L-E-S-C-H. The original population of the Fleches was in Spain, but during the Inquisition, in about 1480, they left. Otherwise, if they didn't change religions, they'd be whatever. They wouldn't be around anymore.
Right.
So most of them went to Germany, and Grandpa's family group left Germany to go to Hungary about, what, I think it was around 1840 or so. So now Grandpa takes a train from Ellis Island to Chicago. We're supposed to meet Cousin Dave. Was he really a cousin, or was he getting economics to be called a cousin to take care of this young man? I think he was a cousin.
Okay.
They live on 1742 West Pierce Avenue, one block south of North Avenue. Grandpa goes to school at night and works during the day. His second job is working at a store called Siegel Cooper. It's on State Street, east of State. It's on Madison, south of Madison. So it's right on the corner. It's a four-story building. It's a department store, one of the first in Chicago in that area. In the second year working there, which is probably about 1895 or late early 96, they put him in the camera department. My dad says he falls in love. Wow.
Wow.
And wants that to be his future. So he finds the gumption to ask for permission to leave their business because he wants to open up his own store. And he finds two partners. One of them is an optometrist, and one of them has the franchise, I guess, for Victrolas with the big ear coming out and the crank and the dog.
Oh,
in
yeah.
the scene,
RCA,
which is famous.
Yeah.
RCA, right. And they open up a store at 31 East Adams. Okay, where does the name come from? Well, Grandpa must have done some thinking. It's not in the diary. I didn't ask Dad, except for, hey, I don't remember what he said. But I think State and Madison is what to Chicago? It's 00, but yeah. It's also what? The central part of our city. Boom, Central Camera Company.
Perfect.
They stayed there from 1899 to 1907. But in 1902, I believe, Grandpa hires one of the first non-whites to sell retail in the camera store, George. He's 6 foot six or 6 foot seven. When I meet him in about 1961 or two, because I'm there helping Dad, sure, I'm 11 or 12. I'm born in 48. Okay, so I was 13 or 14. And Dad waves him in. Come in, George, you're part of the family. Don't stand out there. Here's my son. Boom, we shake hands. My hand gets lost in his hand. It's lost. He doesn't squeeze or whatever. And I see them talk like they're old friends, which they were. My dad was born in 10. So George knew the whole family. My uncle, Dad's brother, was born in 06. There were two ladies, Alice born in 12, and Lucille born in 1919.
Don, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. We've got to take a quick break, and then we're going to continue with the history. And I have a lot of questions. Right. If you have a question about Central Camera or about Don or any of that, 312-981-7200. I know we've got a couple people on hold who want to talk to you too, Don. So we're going to do that in just a minute. And there is a GoFundMe page set up, Central Camera Company Rebuild. The Flesh family has started it. They've owned Central Camera Company for 121 years. The funds raised will be used directly for Central Camera's rebuild at 230 South Wabash. Let's do this. Then there's more. It's WGN. 720 WGN. We are talking cameras and camera companies and a Chicago landmark. We've got Don Flesh. He is the owner of Central Camera, 230 South Wabash. Was looted and burned the other night, but you can help out and help bring this treasure back. Central Camera Company Rebuild is the GoFundMe page. Don, before we continue with the history of the shop, Penny has been holding on. She wants to jump on and say hello. Hi, Penny.
Oh, hi, Penny.
Hi there. Hi there. And I am in your age category, born in the same year.
Cool.
How about that?
Fun, isn't it?
Isn't
it fun?
Are you having fun at this age, Penny? That's what Don's asking.
Oh, a few more aches and pains than I'd like.
Okay.
Let's put it that way.
Right.
One of the comments when I happen to hear you on is my husband is active in cameras, and in fact, the name Richard Stromberg, a friend of his,
sure, used I know
to
Richard
buy cameras.
Well.
Do you remember Richard Stromberg?
Oh, very well. Richard took a trip once with his lady friend, and they went from Canada heading towards Alaska. He forgot to buy film. So when I talked to him, I said, Richard, tell me where you'll be in 4 days, what hotel or what motel. I'll send it up. So we sent up film at least two or three times. I said, don't pay me. You'll pay me when you get back. And whatever. So, yeah, Richard was nice guy, a good character. Yeah.
He was.
He started a
camera person.
Right.
He has a school. He sold the school. His wife sold the school after he had passed. My husband still does tours in that school, in a school that was founded. That he founded after he left one school where he initially had started. But he's still downtown. My husband still goes downtown to a school and does tours and helps them out in the same place where Richard used to teach last.
Oh, wow. That's
very cool.
That's very nice and cool,
Penny,
that they were such good friends, yes.
Penny, thank you for the call. Have a great night.
Thank you, and I hope you rebuild, because my husband is a camera person.
We're rebuilding, there's no doubt about it.
And the irony, I used to work in the next building.
Oh, did you really?
The building to the right. I was a legal secretary in that little store. Two doors down from you, there's a store, and then there was an office.
Penny, were you south towards Jackson, or were you north towards Adams?
Towards Jackson, two doors down.
Okay, gotcha.
Wow.
Know exactly what it was.
Well, Penny, thanks for the call. Have a great night.
There used to be a uniform shop, and there was mannequins for men and women wearing uniforms. Yes.
Now, Don, Robert wants to take a little trip down memory lane with you, too. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Yeah, Robert Sherman here.
Yes, Robert. Robert.
Don Flesh. Yes, I live next to Eugene Cerf and Jackie Cerf from 1974 to 1999. I believe Gene managed your store from somewhere around about the mid-50s to the mid-80s. And I just want to tell you how proud he was to work for you.
I knew Gene very well, and he left in the late 80s, early 90s. He was there about 25 years. He was the assistant manager.
Wow.
Very technical, very smart. We had lots of nice talks. I knew his wife, and he had a daughter, I think, one daughter.
Yes, daughter lives in Nancy lives in Denver.
Nancy, okay.
And his wife, Jackie, passed away about a year ago.
Oh, really? Because Gene died about, what, 10 or 12?
Gene probably died somewhere before 99, because we moved from next door to them to Albany, New York in 99.
Wow.
So somewhere in the 95 to 99 range.
Wow.
But he spoke so highly, and I was an engineer for Amoco Oil, and I bought many. I've still got an Olympus OM1, and a couple of other, and all the various lenses. I took a lot of auto racing pictures with Gene's guidance.
Wonderful. Yeah, Gene was very good and technical and knew how to be calm and talk to people and make them feel comfortable, not to take their money, but to teach them.
Yeah.
We like teaching at our store.
Robert,
your shop was absolutely fabulous.
Thank you for the call, Robert. Take care.
Thank you, sir.
Now, all right, Don, that's got to be wonderful to hear from all these names from the past and stuff. I'm wondering, was there ever a question that you were going to go into the camera business, that you were going to follow your grandfather?
Always, I wanted to be there. It was my only job. I helped a friend out when we were in grammar school with a paper route, rubber banding the newspapers and then trying to throw them up to the second floor. I never got him there. He got them there. His name was Gordon Bass. And he's retired. He was number two at Children's Hospital.
Oh, wow. And so that was it? That was the last real manual labor that you wanted to do?
And I didn't get paid for it. I didn't get paid for it. I was helping.
So then you go into the camera. Now, what precipitated the move to the current location? Because you said your grandfather...
Oh, no, there was another one. After 1907, Grandpa moved to the Palmer House.
Okay.
On the Wabash side. And as you walk in now on the right, which is the north part of the walk-in. Just as you walk in, there's a candy store there. That was Grandpa's store. And he was there till 1929. Well, my dad was born in 10, and his brother was born in 6, as I said, so they played around there as kids.
Oh, wow. And then what made him decide to leave? Just he wanted to be in his own
location?
They
wanted a bigger store. They wanted a larger store.
Okay.
So what did they do? The Depression was on. It's February of 29. Things are getting really tough. The Depression comes, in October of 29.
Yeah.
They hired 80 or 90 men who stood in the line down to Central Camera at 230 South Wabash, and they had boxes filled with inventory, and you handed it to me, and I handed it to Dave, and it went down the line, the inventory walked in.
Wow.
Yeah. I have one photograph of that.
And all this time, there was never, did you have any desire to move once you were in this 230 South Wabash location?
Never.
That was it.
No, I did have thoughts that, Dad, we need a bigger store. We can display better. He says, think about it this way. We have a narrow walkthrough. There's a store is about 22 feet wide.
Right.
Then you have aisles. Then you have a showcase on both sides. So the walking area is about 7 feet wide. He says, you get three people in the store, people walking by. It looks crowded.
Well,
you get stores with twice the amount west of the aisles. Three people doesn't cut it. As far as that. So that was one thing. I wanted more space. And then over the years, I said, geez, I'm glad we didn't find more space.
Yeah, I would
store
imagine.
Next door, yeah, we could have taken and stuff like that. Go ahead.
But you stayed there, and you know, sometimes you listen to your folks, and they're right. Don, I got to put you on hold for a second because we've got to do an emergency broadcast test. But
go ahead.
We will continue. Will continue speaking in just a moment. Don Flesch is my guest. He's the owner of Central Camera. 312-981-7200. If you have a comment for Don, we've been able to hear from some people from his past, which is very nice. I've got to talk to him once we do this about some of the evolution. How a camera store adjusts to digital coming in. Why do people still want to? Tom, we could actually talk to Don all night, but I don't think he's going to stay with us all night, which is unfortunate. We'll have to talk to him again. It's Brian Noonan for Nick D. We are talking cameras and a little piece of Chicago history that was temporarily lost on Saturday night. Central Camera at 230 South Wabash was looted and set on fire. Don Flesch is the owner of Central Camera, and he's my guest this morning. And it's been a fascinating walk so far down through the history of this unbelievable business that has been in Chicago since 1899 and been in on South Wabash Avenue since 1929. Don, before we've had some people call in, Robert sure wants to jump in because he bought his first camera from you. Hi, Robert.
Oh, hi, Robert.
My wife bought a camera for me for our wedding. I was married in 84, still married to the same wonderful lady, but a professional camera bought
from
your store.
Still have a camera.
I still have the camera.
Good.
and again, to this day I don't know how to work it correctly, but it has an auto switch and it takes fabulous pictures. And we bought it in 83 for $1,000.
Wow.
Well, it's a professional made camera for a professional. I'm not a professional. But we, you know, she's always gone back and bought accessories from you guys, and you know, God bless you, stick in there and rebuild, and we need you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Robert.
We need you, and we love you out there, and our thoughts and prayers are with all the people that are going through all this chaos.
Now, Robert, listen, when Don reopens, you have to go down there and finally learn how to work this camera correctly.
Please.
I would love to learn how to work it correctly. I've done classes. I'm just damn. I'm lucky. I know how to talk on the computer. I'm talking to you on.
Well, you did
all
that
I know
very
is
well,
people
Robert.
Ask me what's my wife's phone number. And I go, it's number two.
Robert, thank you for the call. One more first for you, Don, before we go on. Mike has been hanging on. He's in Joliet. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, Don, I just wanted to say, first of all, how sorry I am that you lost your shop there, temporarily at least. When I woke up in the morning and saw the pictures on Instagram and Facebook, my heart sank a little bit. Ironically, one of the things that I really enjoy photographing is neon signs. And that sign out in front of your shop is just iconic. I mean, it's part of the landscape in Chicago. But the thing I wanted to share with you guys is I got into photography about 15 years ago, and when I got my first real camera, I just bought a cheap tripod at like Best Buy or something like that. And after maybe a year or two, I thought, you know, I should probably invest in a really good, solid tripod. So I had some photographer friends that just, Central Camera is the place to go. And I went in there one day, and I was absolutely blown away at the level of customer service that I received. I couldn't tell you the person's name, but just, you know, they took
man or a woman.
It was a man. I want to say it was an older African-American gentleman.
Isaiah Williams.
Okay.
Williams.
And I was just really, impressed with the time that he took with me, just
very
to make sure that I got the right tripod. I'm sorry?
Very soft-spoken and very informative. I just talked to him today. His wife and he were in a small car accident about a month ago. They're quite fine now, though. And
I still have the tripod to this day. I don't do as much photography as I used to, but I still have it, and it still works wonderful.
Terrific.
Well, Mike,
terrific.
Thank you for the call.
I'll call him tomorrow and tell him that you said hi. So,
okay.
When do you think you bought the tripod? How many years back?
Robert? Oh man, it's got to be at least 15 years ago.
17? Wonderful.
15 years ago, 1-5.
15, okay, 1-5.
Well, Mike, thank you for the call, and take care of that tripod.
All right, thank you, guys.
Take care.
Thank you kindly for the nice message.
Don, but we don't have a whole lot of time, but I wanted to ask you, all the evolution in photography and customers' use of cameras and things like that, what is it in this day and age where, you know, a lot of people are satisfied to just take pictures with their phone? What is it that keeps people coming back and using film and coming to a place like Central Camera to get these big, beautiful cameras?
Everybody wants to have fun. Some people want to have simple fun, and some people want to have learning fun. What's the theory of photography? Where did it come from? What is, you know, if you look at something and have your eyeballs wide open, what you're looking at is in focus. What's behind it is probably out of focus. If you squint, your aperture is getting tiny, and that gives you what's called depth of field.
Right.
So the item you're looking and the item behind are both in focus. Well, you can't do that too easily to learn those procedures with automatic everything products. But you can usually with film cameras, because they have a different design, and they wanted people to learn, and then automation came to them, and then so on, and evolution. But I use film. I don't touch digital.
Okay.
I like the mystery. I like to take one shot. I like to think about it instead of rattling off a machine gun and catching and then picking out one. So it's a matter of patience. How do you love something? How do you not love something? You know, and how do you fall in love with it?
Well, and it's funny. Most of us, I should say, of a certain age, we all started out with some sort of film camera, you know, whether it was an inexpensive Kodak or whatever we had. And then sometimes you moved up and you got a better camera. And then I think for a lot of people, it's convenience, like you say, it's quick fun rather than educated fun. But there is something when you see photographs that were taken with film, there's just a different feel to them, you know?
Yes, totally, yes.
And
totally,
I still remember
totally,
going to the photomat to get my, you know, pulling in the parking lot at the photomat to get my film developed.
Right. And yeah, I wish they were still around and make it easier for people. We still develop film and sell film and have a wonderful assortment, probably the best I've ever seen in the country.
Well, let's get to your plans for the future now, because Saturday, as you said, you're not going to let one horrible moment define going forward. So how do you move forward? What's the plan?
Well, the plan is we have to move forward. I mean, we're here to do what? Serve the community for their photographic ideas and thoughts and needs. And also, you know, the teacher wins as much as the student.
Yeah.
And, okay, sometimes we're a teacher, sometimes we're learning. But the key is to be there also for ourselves and also for the history of our store, the history of my family with the store. And right now there's an empty store right next to us. It was Kramer's Health Food. And they left 3.5 years ago and it hasn't been rented. So my thoughts are, hey, we finished working on our current product, which is Central Camera Company, and cleaning it up and doing the best we can. But in the meantime, hey, let's take over 500 square feet, get some new windows, get a new doorway that's protective, and have a place where people can get their film, drop it off for developing, get some simple things, be back in business, and be able to tell the landlord, hey, if we can't sell, we can't make a profit, how can I pay you in rent? How can I pay?
Yeah.
So help us. It's helping you. It's helping the community. We thought to name, what were we going to name it, Mayor? What? Yeah, we thought to name it Central Camera Junior.
I love it. And it's right. You stay in the same place. People know where you're at, and they get the original one.
Yeah, we get the original one healthy and back to what it is, you know, based on can we afford to and this and that. And, hey, what do we do with Junior? I don't know. Junior grows up and
that's right.
goes, goes to college or something.
Yeah, Junior joins the family too. And if people want to help, you mentioned serving the community, and the community has always been there to support Central Camera. They can do that now more than ever. A GoFundMe page has been set up, Central Camera Company Rebuild. The funds raised are going to be used to rebuild Central Camera at 230 South Wabash. Maybe give a little to Junior, to get a little seed money to get Junior on his way. And then
There have been so many people that I bumped into in the last 3 days or had phone calls, and I can't keep up with them, but who want to donate photo items that they don't use anymore, or just to help us get going. One of them is a good friend who teaches at RIT in Rochester, New York, and his name is Bob. He's a great guy, Bobby Rose.
Wow. Well, see, that's the kind of loyalty and support you get for being in business since, you know,
1899. I'm not that old, though.
No, you are not. But your grandfather started the business, and you have carried it on after your dad. So, Don, listen, again, I'm sorry for your loss, but your attitude is wonderful, and I know Central Camera is going to bounce back bigger and better than ever. Thank you for taking the time this morning. I really appreciated talking to you, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you for including us in one of your programs and giving us the opportunity.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you very much. Hopefully you'll come in the store, whether it's Junior or non-Junior, to say hi.
I definitely will. Don, thanks very much. Don't forget, Central Camera Company Rebuild is the GoFundMe. Hey, my turn again.
LA lady.
It's Brian Noonan in for Nick D. Nick will be back. He's just taking the week off. And I am happy to be here with you all week. So 312-981-7200, that's how you get a hold of me. That's how you get involved in the conversation. That's how you may want to ask some questions of my next guest, a guy you've heard here many times before on WGN, a guy I've had the pleasure of talking to before, and you will have the pleasure of talking to tonight. Tom Appel is here. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and he's the host of the Car Stuff podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Tom, good to talk to you again. How are you?
Brian, good. How are you?
I am well. How's the pandemic treating you?
Reasonably well. Me and the family are doing good. I think we're a little sick of each other, but other than that, I mean, things are good.
Yeah, that's it. You know, you always hear everybody say, oh, I want to spend more time with my family. Until it's 24/7, and then you go, you know, my family's not all it's cracked up to be. Maybe we need a, you know, that's why I leave the house for a couple hours a day.
That is exactly why.
So this is a time when, you know, it's tough for anybody who's in the retail business, but car dealers are having a hard time too. And I was amazed and impressed and shocked by how quickly most of the major auto manufacturers were able to transition from their normal TV commercials to their, hey, we care about you and it's time to, you know, come in for service. But if you need a new vehicle, we're still here selling cars.
Yeah, they're walking a fine line with those ads because obviously you want to encourage people to socially distance themselves. But on the other hand, car dealers do not want to stop selling cars. Manufacturers do not want to stop selling cars. So, yeah, this is a very strange point in time for everybody, but especially for car manufacturers.
Well, and it's forced them to do something that they've done more, but I don't know how much they like it. They're selling more cars online, or they're attempting to sell more cars online.
Yeah, and this is a very strange thing specifically for car dealers. If you're a car dealer and if you've invested heavily in your dealership and trained your staff and have a great looking dealership, none of that matters very much when you end up in a price bidding war online. And that's really what happens when you sell cars online like that. New cars, for the most part, are generally sold through dealerships. Carvana and Car Gurus, these car buying services, those mostly deal with used cars. So now you're dragging new car dealers into this process, and it works for them, but it probably lowers margins because really it's a bidding war for those cars. And all these things, all these assets and all these things you've invested in don't matter as much if someone isn't there in person to admire them.
Yeah, it's a tricky process too, because my daughter was in New York City for a job. She's taken a job in New Orleans, so she's home and she needed a car. So she was going back and forth, as you said, with some of the used car sites, and then because of deals and everything else, it came out where for like a grand or two more, she was able to buy a new car, but she went through one of these websites and really didn't have to do too much at the dealership. Is that it was TrueCar? Have you dealt with TrueCar?
Yeah, I know a lot about TrueCar, and one of the great things about TrueCar is that they measure transaction prices in an area, so it can be very useful when you're car shopping to know what cars are going for where you live.
Yeah, that's the one she used, and so I guess do the dealers? I was a little confused when it was all over, but the dealers contract with TrueCar because there was something, you know, there was. Just like any time anybody buys a car, you're looking at the final price and you're looking at the line items, and there was something in there that we were like, well, we don't need this. And they're like, well, to get the TrueCar price, that's part of the deal. We have to, you know, this whatever Platinum Care or whatever thing it was. Is that how it works with them, with the dealers?
Yeah, for the most part, TrueCar or other sites like that, Cars.com has a referral service too, and the revenue there is that TrueCar or Cars.com, for example, get a fee from the dealer for the referral is okay. How that works.
Okay. So now, besides them, you know, having to compete in this bidding war, with the dealerships, with these sites, what's the advantage for the consumer? Is it a better deal to buy online? Is it less pressure? What's the benefits of, even if there wasn't a pandemic, of me buying my car online?
Yeah, probably a better deal for the consumer. First of all, dealers are more anxious to sell cars because sales are way off. They're off about 50%. So deals are there to be had. But additionally, if you're shopping online, you are pitting dealers against other dealers. So it does become a bidding war for your business. And that used to be a little bit less true when you used to drive from dealer to dealer, and they'd have different cars on the lot and things like that. But this really commoditizes the process. On the other hand, dealers are getting ready to deal with companies like Car Gurus and Carvana, which will sooner or later manage to figure out how to sell new cars, which right now there's some legal barriers to that.
Okay. And what's when you're looking on these sites and some of the used car sites, this is probably a very basic question, but I'm a very basic guy, Tom, let's be honest. What's the difference between if I'm looking for a certified, if I see something that says, oh, this is a certified used car, as opposed to just, hey, this is a car that Bob brought in and we bought it off him?
Yeah, if it's really certified used, or CPO, certified pre-owned, that means that the brand manufacturer, Chevy, Lexus, whoever, got involved in the process. So if you buy a Lexus certified pre-owned vehicle, that vehicle is approved by Lexus. There is a process by which the car is inspected. It is approved. It's in a certain, it's in guaranteed condition. There's additional warranty coverage, but there's also some additional some care after the fact. It's not a bad deal because the upsell is usually less than 10% on the car, and there are certain guarantees and warranties there that make it worth your time. So certified pre-owned, somewhere between new and used.
And if somebody is looking for a pre-owned car now, you know, it used to be higher mileage, obviously, is never great. But is that less of a concern now if a car has a little higher mileage? Where do you draw the line as opposed to years old versus how many miles?
That's a great question, and it used to be that if anything got close to 100,000 miles, you just wrote it off. You know, and when I was younger and shopping for cars, I was just too old. But now cars, 80, 90,000, you know, even 100,000 miles, probably got some life left in them. Cars last a lot longer than they used to.
Really?
Now,
see, I thought you were going to go with like 40 or 50,000, and that would be a lot. 100,000 seems like, and I keep all my cars way past 100. I've had some that hit 2, but 100 seems old to me. But now a newer car is going to do with 100,000 is still going to do pretty well, huh?
It could,
maybe.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe.
Like Kelly Blue Book, which tracks the value of cars, and it's a great site for trying to figure out what a used car is worth, for example. They track cars into the 100 and even 200,000 mile range, something they didn't do 15, 20 years ago.
Wow. Tom Appel is here. If you have a question for Tom, 312-981-7200. When we come back after the break, a lot of people's cars have been sitting around, Tom, and nobody's driving. Nobody can go anywhere because we're all spending quality time with our families nonstop. So we have to figure out what we can do if we decide, all right, I have to get out of the house, but my car hasn't moved in a month. How should we be taking care of our cars? We'll talk with Tom about that and so much more. And if you have a question, again, 312-981-7200. We'll do that after this. It's WGN. Brian Noonan in for Nick. You like how I hit the post there, Tom? That was a man. It's just like I'm back on Top 40 Radio. And by back on, I mean I've never done Top 40 Radio, but I think I could have. What I am doing now is talking about cars with Tom Appel. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and he's the host of the Car Stuff podcast. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. All right, Tom, I mentioned before that, you know, a lot of us haven't really had to drive our cars much. There's all these studies coming out that people are driving less and less because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
So our cars are sitting there, which they're not used to. They're probably wondering where we are, if I can, you know, give my car a human motion. What should we be doing to make sure that our car is being maintained right when it's not being driven?
Yeah, that's a great question. Cars should not sit for too long. There's all sorts of things that happen when a car sits. Oil starts to descend out of the engine and into the crankcase, and the battery starts to lose power. There's a lot going on there. So, and the brakes start to seize up. So what you want to do, if your car has just been sitting there, is to start it once or twice a week and let it run for 5 or 10 minutes. That's really good for the car. It's really good for the battery. It's especially good for the engine. But once a week, you should probably take the car out too and take it for a drive. And it's really nice if you can get it up on the highway, and it's really nice if you can hit the brakes hard a couple of times just to scrape off that accumulating rust that gets up on the rotors.
Okay.
But that's really good for your car.
So it's gotta, you've got to drive it at least once a week. It's like date night for you and your car.
It's exactly that.
Take it out somewhere nice, get it hot, get it all revved up, and then slam the brakes on and deny it. Tease it with fast speed and then deny it with the hard brake slam.
And shockingly, that's good for the car. Yeah,
sure. Not good for us, but great for the car. All right. So take it. Now, if like, I had to take, my mom asked me, she hadn't driven her car in a while, but you know, and she was like, "Well, it needs an oil change." So I took it the other day for an oil change. If somebody is about at the mileage, but their car's been sitting, do they still need to get that oil change?
Yeah, they really do. It's worse after a car has sat because moisture accumulates in the oil, and as you run it, as you drive it every day, that moisture burns off. But after a while, it just accumulates in the oil and starts to degrade the oil. So, yeah, if your car has been sitting during the duration of this pandemic, you're going to want to get an oil change pretty much right away when you start driving again.
Oh, okay, and so start it up a couple times a week. Just start it up, let it idle for about 5 minutes, but once a week you got to drive.
Yeah.
That's the takeaway. 312-981-7200. Do you have a question for Tom? Jimmy does. He is in Lamont. Hi, Jimmy.
Good morning to you.
Jimmy, it sounds like you're taking your car out for a date drive right now.
Yes, I am. I'm going to work.
All right. So what's your question for Tom?
Mr. Tom, I want you to look into your crystal ball and tell me approximately which year the electrics will sell more than 50%, 55% more cars than gas, because I'm going to buy a car next year, but I keep my cars for about 10 years. So when do you think the electrics are going to take over the gas cars?
A lot of that has to do with what happens in Congress in the next couple of years. Right now, there isn't much incentive to buy an electric vehicle. There is the incentive on a few brands, but like Chevy and Nissan and Tesla have burned through their federal tax credits. Nissan almost has. And there isn't much incentive in America to buy an electric car right now. And I think that when people come out of the pandemic, they're probably not going to be thinking like that. In the U.S., 50% share of electrics, if I was going to guess, 2035, something like that. In Europe, it'll come on much sooner because there's a lot more government intervention there and compelling people to go electric. So I think it depends where you live. But in the U.S., I'm going to say 2035, maybe even 2040.
Thank you very much. That answers my question. And I'm thinking about a Toyota Supra.
Heck of a fun car.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome,
thank you.
Jimmy. Take care. Thanks for the call. Are electrics really going to be... Are they the wave of the future? I love to burn fossil fuels, Tom. So it breaks my heart.
I think we all do. I think we want to involve the dinosaur as much as we can. But yeah, the absolute path to the future is electric. It's just a question of how quickly that's going to happen. And as cars become more fuel efficient and as gas stays cheap, and as the current administration isn't really encouraging any move towards efficiency, that stuff's being pushed back.
Let me ask you this. Now, my daughter just, I mentioned before, bought a car, and I know some other people have cars like this. The only time I had seen something like this before was on a Prius. When she stops at a stoplight or a stop sign, the engine, for all intents and purposes, shuts off.
Yes.
And then it starts again. And it, the first time I was in the car with her, I was just riding, but it was a little disconcerting. What's going on with the engine when that happens?
Yeah, that is stop-start. It's just called stop-start. And it works very well in a lot of applications. And I think a lot of people are startled by it because it's relatively new.
Yes.
It was on hybrids, as you mentioned, but it hasn't been on other vehicles. But that's changed now. And it does actually save a considerable amount of fuel. But the stop-start system won't work when the air conditioning is on. It usually won't work when it's very cold. So a lot of people forget they have it. And then you get into nice weather, and all of a sudden it starts working, and you're surprised by it. But, yeah, it's an excellent way to save fuel. It's usually good for a mile per gallon or even two in the city.
And why is it? Is it because the engine needs to keep going to keep the air conditioner working? Is that why it doesn't work with the air conditioner?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly why.
Look at that. Mr. Technical right here, Tom. You're rubbing off on me. Rosemary has a question for you. She's in Albany Park. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi. Yes, I'm an older person, but I think this is going to be my last car. But I want it to be a Fiat because I am Italian, and I just think it's only right, and they're so cute. What do you think about that?
Well, the Fiat line just shrank a little bit. The 500 was dropped from the American lineup. The 500L, which is sort of a small wagon, is going to be disappearing soon. So that really only leaves the 500X, which is a compact crossover, which just coincidentally I'm driving this week as a test car. It's a nice vehicle. I like it a lot. It's roomy. It rides well. It's good on the highway. But there have been some reliability problems at Fiat. So you want to check those out first, too. If you live near a dealer, that's great. And while you're under warranty, that's fine, too. But it may not be a vehicle you want to keep more than 3 or 4 years.
I wanted to ask one more question. I have fallen in love. I have a GM car right now, and I love my OnStar. Can I get that in a Fiat, or do they have their own navigation system?
The Fiats are available through our navigation systems. OnStar is a full telematics system, so there are features to OnStar, which is mostly a General Motors product, that you would not find on the Fiat.
But there is something I can get.
Yeah, there's absolutely an onboard navigation system, yes.
You'll be all set.
Okay.
Now, listen, Rosemary, you said you're Italian and you're thinking Fiat. You gave up on Lamborghini or Alfa Romeo?
I did. Well,
okay.
You know, anybody can have that, but I just want to, I think those Fiats are so adorable.
Well, listen, that's 90% of it.
I need to be up a little higher, but I don't think that's going to be the car for me if that's the case. It's not a high car, is it? It's low.
No, the 500X is, in fact, a small crossover. So the H-point, as they call it, or hip point, is perfect for people looking to just slide into the car laterally. It may actually work very well for you.
There you go. Well, that's good
news. The
500X. 500X, yep.
X. Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Rosemary. Good luck. Since we got a lot of people thinking about buying new cars, something I've been noticing, Tom, is, you know, the bad news is Hertz said they're filing for bankruptcy. A lot of rental car companies, because nobody's traveling and nobody's traveling for business, they're not renting cars. I'm seeing a lot of these companies saying, hey, we're selling off our inventory. Now, historically, people have been a little hesitant of buying used rental cars or fleet vehicles. Is that changing? Is this a good deal if somebody's looking to get a car, maybe has a little higher mileage, but as you said before, mileage can be tricky. 100,000 may not be as bad on some vehicles. Are fleet and rental cars still kind of something we should avoid, or what's going on?
I don't think so. There are people that will tell you should worry about that, but but so many cars, about 2 million cars a year, and this is going to change now after the COVID situation, but about 2 million cars a year were put into rental fleets, and those vehicles entered into used car fleets, and I don't know how many people even knew that they were used rental cars. They go through auctions like Mannheim auctions, they end up at dealerships, and they're just used cars like any other car. As for the concern, the rental companies themselves take very, very good care of the cars because they want the resale value to be high at the time that they get rid of those vehicles. So it comes down to the question to whether or not you believe that people who buy rental cars not only abuse those cars, but they abuse them to such an extent that it compromises their long-term reliability. And that, I really don't believe that that's the case. I believe that most people that rent a car just rent a car to get someplace, and they get back to the airport and they go home. I don't know that they're generally abused. And this has been happening for years and years and decades and decades, and I've never seen numbers that suggest that reliability of used rental cars is in any way inferior to that of non-rental cars.
Was that the big worry that people had that, you know, oh, I don't know who rented this, and one person could have driven it very carefully and not slammed on the brakes or jerked the wheel, and the next person could have driven it crazy. Is that why the legend of trying to avoid these cars grew?
Yeah, that is the concern. And if you look at like a car at Enterprise, which sells a lot of its own rental cars through dealerships, there's one out here in Palatine where I live, for example. Sometimes you will find a few more dings on the car than you might another rental car. And that makes some sense where you're stopping at airports and stopping at other places. And that if that matters to you, maybe that's not the way you go. But the cars can be a very good deal.
All right, so it's something to look into, and like you said, a lot of those cars are going to be flooding the market now. That's got to be making some of these, you know, we talked about dealers having a little worry because of having to do all this stuff online. This has to be another worry to lay on top of it.
Yeah, it is. Rental fleets are going to shrink later in the year. So about 500,000, maybe even 1 million cars are just going to suddenly become available. It should drive down used car prices. So it might be a great time to buy a car later this year.
All right. See, so if you're maybe Rosemary waits on her Fiat. Maybe she finds something else. You never know. All right, we got to take a quick break. But when we come back, Tom, I want to. This is something that I think is not a great idea, but people are getting excited about it. Cars that drive themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll do better than the way people are driving now. We'll see. I want to talk more to you about that and so much more. If you have a question for Tom Appel, 312-981-7200. That's the number. You can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And always listen to the Car Stuff podcast. We'll talk about so much more with Tom on the other side. It is WGN. Brian Noonan in for Nick. I'm going to do my best to hit the post every time, because this music is right in my wheelhouse. I know, Tom, you think I'm ancient, and I used to listen to this on a Victrola, which is correct, but it was still very good. Nick will be back. I am in for Nick all this week, but that does not stop me from talking to Tom Appel and getting all the latest car information. If you have a question for Tom, 312-981-7200. There was a new poll that was conducted by Car Gurus, Tom, and they asked people, what's your overall opinion about the development of self-driving cars? What did people say?
People aren't that interested. That's what people said, yeah. I guess there were two studies mentioned in the article, and yeah, and in both cases, I think it was like 35% of people thought it was cool, and maybe in the other one, 25% did. But it's looking increasingly like we can't count on the consumer to drive this move towards autonomous vehicles, and more likely it's going to be commercial operations that adopt the technology first.
What's been your impression of this so far? I mean, I remember seeing footage, I think we all did, on the news of a guy sleeping while his car was driving, and I'm sure that's not how they were designed to be operated, but we saw it. What do you think of these self-driving cars?
Yeah, right now there's nothing on the market that allows you to not pay attention, essentially. That's just the way the thing works. Cadillac Super Cruise, for example, which is probably one of the more advanced systems, and it's about to spread to other Cadillac models. It's been very limited in availability. The Super Cruise system allows you to take your hands off the wheel for extended periods of time, but it wants you looking at the road.
Okay.
So you're not really relieved from that much anxiety while you do this. That said, I've driven a Cadillac CT6 with the system. It works remarkably well. It's kind of frightening to not actually grab the wheel. And if you look away, the car will let you know that you're looking away, and it wants you to pay attention. It will demand that you look forward, and at some point it's going to demand that you put your hands back on the wheel if you're not complying with the paying attention part of the agreement you have with the car.
So what is it that's keeping track of your eyes and where your eyes are looking?
It's actually that. It's a camera that's looking at your head, and it's sort of adjusting. It's looking at your eyes and making sure that they're at an angle that suggests that you are paying attention.
That's a little too much hocus pocus for me. I got to be honest. I don't want my car staring back at me going, "Hey, man, you're not paying attention." I know. I'm looking over there. Did you see who was walking down the street? No, that's I'm with the group that is not really enthralled by this.
Yeah, I think that what we're going to see first is things like ride hailing services will be the groundbreaking group to probably put these into application first.
Now, this might be a dumb question, but there's always going to be somebody back there behind the wheel, right?
No, that's not the plan. The plan is actually that you should be able to get into a car and use your phone and program in an address and whoosh, you're off. That should be the plan. What they call level 5 autonomy or complete autonomy, there would not be a steering wheel in the car.
Wow. All right, I'm going to let that sink in for a second, Tom, because I'm quite frankly, I'm a little disturbed by that. I'm a tad bit terrified. You know, I rave all the time about how badly a lot of people drive, but who am I going to swear at if there's nobody there, if there's not even a steering wheel?
Yeah, great question. Whose fault is it?
Yeah, whose fault is it? Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's going to lead to a whole bunch of other things. But this is far down the road. I'll probably be carbon. I'll probably be a fossil fuel that's not being used in a car anymore when this happens, right?
Yeah, we're going to see the autonomous rush back off a little bit. It was really popular with stockholders for a while, so every automaker had to have some sort of program in place, preferably a program that had a name that sounded cool. But I think we're going to see this back off a little bit. There's not a lot of public demand, so there needs to be commercial demand. But I think that COVID having dinged everyone's profits so hard, we're probably going to see this backburnered for a while.
Is there a trend that you see as the car companies are starting to look ahead? What's coming? For a while, you know, it was the crossovers. Then it was smaller SUVs. Then it was, it all goes in cycles. What's the next cycle going to be?
That's a really good question. The hot market now for 6-7 years has been compact crossovers, and that's softened now, and that doesn't seem to be growing. There seems to be some growth in really small crossovers. The Hyundai Venue, for example, was just released, and that's Hyundai's smallest crossover, and it seems to be selling pretty well. What's next is a good question. I don't know if it's a body style as much as it is the adoption of electric vehicles. And they're sneaking up on us. I think we're going to see electric stuff slowly become normal. But I don't know what would be next in terms of a body style. A lot of people think the station wagon might make a comeback, which would be kind of cool, but I'm not sure that's on the horizon.
I'm a station wagon guy from way back. Had an Oldsmobile Country Squire wagon, had a Buick Roadmaster wagon.
Yeah.
Love them. Love the wagon. I just make Tom laugh because next he thinks I'm going to say, I love the station wagon, I love the Conestoga wagon, all the wagons. I love a Red Ryder, a Red Flyer, PF, whatever the Flyer. But you know what I'm saying. Anyway, so, all right, since electric vehicles have come up again, how have they evolved to the point where now, you know, we've been hearing for a long time that they were going to be the next big thing, and then, you know, Chevy would come out with one and the Prius, and there have been different models coming out, but they haven't really caught on. And what will it take for them? So this is, I guess, a multi-layered question. How have they evolved? It's all coming. How have they evolved? And do we have enough infrastructure of charging stations around for them to really catch on and it not be, you know, 5 people at the mall all staring at one plug going, I need to plug in my car?
Yeah, 2 good questions. And the first one is the big evolution has been a reduction in the development cost of the battery. And if you go way back to like when the Chevrolet Volt was delivered back in 2011, the battery pack on that car was something like $1,000 per kilowatt hour. So that battery was $16,000, which is crazy when you think about a $16,000 part of a, you know, a $30,000 car. But that cost is coming down to the point where people are talking about it being $100 or $150 per kilowatt hour, which is far more reasonable.
Yeah.
And we're at a point now where the cost to build an electric car is not dramatically higher than the cost to build a gasoline-powered car. So the retail price of those vehicles has continued to come down to the point where they're reasonably attractive alternatives to gasoline-powered cars. Now, the range is also improving, too, and it seems like the buying public really likes cars with a range of 250 miles, and they really, really like cars with a range of 300 miles. And that's approximately what you get from a tank of gas. So I think that people are comfortable with those numbers. So that's what's going on. In terms of infrastructure, one thing everyone needs to remember is that you would charge most of the time at home.
Okay.
Which is a fairly easy thing to do. You do have to install a level 2 charger, which can cost you $500 or $1,000, but you only need to do that once, ever. So that's not so hard. As for finding chargers on the road, those are becoming more common.
Now, because I was going to ask you, you say, you know, 300 miles, which is, as you mentioned, what you get on a tank of gas, that's really good. But if I'm going on a road trip, how confident can I be that I will be able to find somewhere to charge my car?
Yeah, increasingly confident. You're finding level 3, which is a faster charging station, increasingly common along interstates and things like that. Now, that's still a long charge. If you wanted to charge your car on a level 3 charger, you're probably looking at half an hour, 35 minutes to get most of a charge, which is, you know, more time than we generally spend when we gas up. But on the other hand, there are restaurants and stuff at truck stops, so it can be fun.
Okay, yeah, it's nothing like stopping at a truck stop.
Right.
Get a shower, play some video games, get a nice sandwich.
Exactly.
It's a lot of. There's always fun at the truck stop, I say. But I say a lot of things. If you have a question for Tom, 312-981-7200, let's talk about some of the cars you've reviewed lately. Since we just mentioned compact SUVs, you talked about the Hyundai Kona.
Yeah, this has been a smash hit for Hyundai. This is a compact crossover. It looks a little bit like a station wagon, just to stay topical.
Yeah.
But nice car. I think it hits a sweet spot in the market. It's a little bit between subcompact and compact, and that seems to be where some attention is now going. And buyers seem to love this car. Fully loaded, it's about $31,000. You can equip it fairly modestly with a 2-liter normally aspirated engine. That means non-turbocharged, or with a turbocharged engine, which is a little bit more spunky if you want to go that route. But this car has a lot of pluses. It's very refined. It feels nice inside. It's roomy. I'm a big guy, and I fit just fine in the car.
Mm-hmm.
But even with big guys up front, there's reasonable passenger space and a very nice cargo area. But all in all, it's just a very nice, balanced car. Our very well-equipped car came to about $31,000, which is still $5,000 or $6,000 less than the average price of a new car.
So how would it compare? Because their other smaller one is the Tucson, right? That's a little bit bigger than the Kona, or is the Tucson not around anymore?
No, Tucson's around, and that's their compact car, and it sells a compact crossover, and that sells very well for them. Yeah, this is a little bit lower, a little bit smaller, and a little bit more affordable.
Hyundai's are, full disclosure, I have a Hyundai, the Santa Fe, and I've been really happy with it, and I didn't know anything about this company other than its name when I got the car.
Yeah. And Hyundai's been around forever. And Hyundai's one of those big companies, too, that does a whole lot of stuff that has nothing to do with cars. They're into shipping and heavy manufacturing. It's a huge conglomerate.
Well, since we are talking about Hyundais, Robert has a question about Hyundais, I believe. Tom is answering his question. Not you, Tom. The other Tom. All right, we'll come back to Robert's Hyundai question, and we'll move on to the next. I'm noticing more and more pickup trucks again, and it was for a time there was everybody had to have a big pickup truck. I don't know if it was the, you know, Kenny Chesney songs or whatever they were listening to. They had to have the big pickup trucks, and it wasn't just people who needed them for work. It was the thing. Nissan has a Titan SL crew cab that you took for a spin.
Yeah. Yeah, the Titan, Nissan's Titan, this is Nissan's redesigned and now slightly freshened. So this is the second generation, .1 of the Nissan Titan. And Nissan wanted desperately to get in on the big truck craze because General Motors with Chevy and GMC and Ford and Ram have been making so much money on big trucks, and it's a huge market. It's about 2.5 million units a year.
Really?
Yeah, so Nissan wanted a piece of that, and they came out with the Titan. And the current generation of the Titan was a little bit more livable, and it competes in terms of features and design, probably in style, but the public has shunned this vehicle. Where Ford can sell what rounds to 1 million units a year of big pickups, Nissan's having a really hard time giving away 40,000.
Why is that?
I think there's a lot going on there. One, Nissan doesn't offer quite as many variations of the vehicle as do Chevy or Ford or Ram. And additionally, I think there's an insane amount of buyer loyalty out there. I think people are Chevy guys, they're Ford guys, and they're Ram guys, and they're not super interested in a Japanese pickup truck.
Okay. Yeah, that, well, you know, the stereotype of that is it's a lot of Fords and Dodges, like you said, and Chevys. It's, you don't hear too much about other brand pickup trucks. But it looks, from just, I'm looking at the way, it looks like a fine vehicle.
Yeah, it's a nice vehicle. I don't know that it's the most competitive in that group, but I think that if you got the right deal and if you found the right features, I think you should look at it. I think if you were shopping trucks, you should try and drive all of them because they all have some things that are worth merit. That said, we make the Ram and the Chevy our consumer guide best buys every year for a number of reasons, but we find those the outstanding picks in the field, but that doesn't mean you won't find something you like elsewhere.
Tom Appel is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He is the host of the Car Stuff podcast. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. We're going to take a quick break. Then we will answer Robert's Hyundai question because, crack producer Tom is all done giving his car advice on that side of the glass. So now we can actually let Tom Appel give his advice on this side of the glass, and we'll do that right after this on 720 WGN. Brian Noonan in for Nick. About a half second too late there. But what the heck? Tom Appel is here. We're talking cars. Tom, now we were just a few minutes ago, we were waiting for Robert to ask us a question about a Hyundai. And now finally we can go out to Oak Brook and say, Robert, welcome. What's your question?
Yeah, in 92, I went to the car show and there was a gorgeous HCD1. Stunning looking car. Why did they? I understand Hyundai does not have the technology maybe at that time, or they've never had the engines like a Vette does or what. But why didn't they take that and put it into production?
I hardly remember the HCD1, but thank you for bringing that up. Hyundai has numbered its concepts like that for a long time, so there were, I don't know what HCD we're up to now, but they've shown a lover of concepts, and a couple of those were beautiful. The one was a sport coupe, as I recall.
Right.
Thompson
convertible, I think it was, but it's just stunning. My neighbor bought one. They only made four of those in 92. He took it and made it, tore it apart. It's completely Porsche except for the body, and it's a wicked car. So, I mean, I don't understand why certain car companies have a brilliant concept and they never actually put it in production. Or is it because the American car companies tell the other Japanese companies, if you do that, we'll squish you like the cockroach
fly? Wow.
I don't believe in the conspiracy there, but I will say that convertibles are a hard thing for manufacturers to actually go ahead and build. They're very expensive to design. There isn't a lot of profit there because there's just so few sales. And convertibles don't sell well in most of the country either. You're generally looking at the smile states where you go down from California to the south and maybe just a little bit up the east coast. And they're good rental cars maybe, but if you try to count now, there's only a few convertibles left. And they're not selling in any volume.
And that's all I own is convertibles. So,
really?
So they don't
you're
do
the guy.
Really good in Alaska.
Or here a lot most of the time.
All right. Well, thank you so much, sir.
Thanks,
you guys,
Robert.
Have a good night.
Take care. Yeah, convertible is nice in theory. If you, like you said, Tom, if you lived in one of those states like California or, you know, or somewhere warm, it's beautiful. But, you know, up here, you get, what, 6 weeks you can drive a convertible?
Exactly. Yeah, and then the top's up with the air on anyway. So.
Yeah, exactly. The top's up with the air on, and then you can't see because the plastic window in the back fogs up. It's
exactly.
So who's still made? Is Chrysler's probably still making their Sebring, right? That's the convertible you see most often. And I know some luxury car lines have convertibles, don't they?
Yeah, no, the Sebring is gone. So you've got Camaro, you've got Mustang domestically, and then you've got a couple German cars, and that's about it.
Wow. And did the Sebring convertible do well? It seemed like I saw them everywhere.
They sold well. They were popular with fleet. Actually, okay. They were great rental cars.
Ah, all right. Yeah, because people, you know, you go somewhere tropical, you want to drive a convertible.
Yeah, and I think Orlando, that might have been their best market.
Sure, everybody got their, well, they're wearing their mouse ears. You got to show those off to everybody. All right, you reviewed, we talked about some of the other cars you reviewed, the Hyundai Kona and the Nissan Titan SL Crew Cab. You also drove the 2020 BMW 228i X-Driven Grand Coupe. That's a mouthful of a name. Why so long?
It's long because of the Grand Coupe part of that,
yes.
which is fascinating. And people who've been watching the auto industry realize that German automakers have been building what they call coupe versions of sedans, of coupes and Grand Coupes or coupe versions of things. And they're really four doors with compromised roof lines. And
okay, explain that difference, because for those of us who don't know I know what a sedan is, but how does it get all coupey?
It's almost a way to back into saying you have no rear seat space. The 2 Series really should be a coupe, but they call it a Grand Coupe because it does have two small rear doors. But you're not going to put an adult back there, at least not an adult you'll ever speak to again. So this is a compact car about the size of a Civic. It's a really good looking car, and it's all sorts of fun to drive, but it does get expensive in a hurry. But it's the 2 Series Grand Coupe. BMW sells it. It's their smallest sedan, and I'm going to call it a sedan, not a coupe. But fascinating car.
It looks as I'm looking at it, it looks pretty nice. What's its start at about 42?
Yeah, it gets to 50 in a hurry, depending on what you put on it, which is an awful lot of money for a compact car.
Yeah, and what's, I mean, I've never driven a BMW. What's the allure?
The allure is, in fact, the driving experience. And I have to say that I've driven a lot of BMWs in the last 20 years, and most of them are, in fact, really just a joy to drive. You have wonderful steering feel, really, really deliberate and direct feeling brakes, great throttle response. They handle great. And then the interior is usually beautiful, too.
If you were looking for a domestic car that it's not going to be obviously equal to the BMW, but something similar with that sort of styling, what would somebody be looking for?
That's a good question, because Lincoln and Cadillac have gotten out of the sedan market for the most part. There is the Cadillac CT4, which is new this year. I haven't driven it yet, but the word on the street is very good, and that's a relatively affordable small luxury car. So that's a little bit bigger than this. It's more the size of a 3 Series BMW, not a 2 Series BMW. But I think that's as close as you're going to get domestically.
What's coming out that you're excited about?
Wow, what a great question. I'm really looking forward to driving General Motors' new large SUVs, the Suburban, the Chevy Suburban, the GMC Yukon, and the Cadillac Escalade. And those were ready to launch, and then the virus hit.
Yeah.
And those are huge money makers for General Motors, and they're all new. And the Cadillac has a gigantic instrument panel that stretches from the driver's side door to the middle of the car. And I'd love to see this thing. Yeah, it's just one giant IP, and I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Wow. Now, remember, it wasn't that long ago that we were saying we can't build these giant SUVs anymore. We've got to get smaller. We've got to get more fuel efficient. That was about the time when the Hummer was all the rage.
Yeah.
And then all the manufacturers started going smaller. So what brought about the renaissance of the Suburban and the Yukon and the Escalade?
Really, those cars never lost favor with the buying public, largely because there is some group of individuals that actually need that kind of towing capacity and that kind of interior space. So that keeps those things afloat even through, like, periods of very expensive gas. Additionally, they're much more fuel efficient than they used to be. When they used to get 10 miles per gallon, they're now getting 16 to 18 miles per gallon.
I'll tell you, I mentioned that my daughter was in New York. We went to pick her up and bring her stuff home, and I rented I got a 2020 Suburban, and it was the most fun I've had driving in a long time, and I like and I like my car, but this was, oh man, it was plush, and it was, and it got great mileage. It was wonderful on the highway. And again, I'm not, you know, I paid for it. I'm not getting anything from Chevy for saying this, but it was really nice. But it was gigantic.
Yeah, they're huge.
I don't, you know, and as I mentioned before, Tom, I don't know if you heard, I'm a station wagon guy. This was bigger than anything I had ever driven.
Yeah, they're gigantic. They're also very expensive. They've gone up in price because people will pay that for them. So the Escalade is now, you can get an Escalade comfortably over $100,000, and you can get a Suburban over $75,000.
That is unbelievable. All right,
yeah.
Before I let you go, you got a blog up here on the consumerguide.com. I didn't even know there were cars in Hogan's Heroes. How is there a blog? I remember tunnels. I remember the office, where Colonel Klink's office, and the barracks. I don't believe I ever saw anybody in a car, and we've only got about a minute left.
Yeah, there were a couple of really weird cars, and the weirdest one, if we have a minute, was General Burkhalter's G4, which was a six-wheel vehicle, and I have no idea why a general would ride around in a convertible six-wheel vehicle, but on Hogan's Heroes, it made sense.
Sure it did. All right, well, people can go to consumerguide.com, to the blog, read all about the cars of Hogan's Heroes. They can listen to the Car Stuff podcast.
Yeah.
They can follow you on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Any parting shots?
No, I think you covered everything. Thank you.
No, thank you. It was very informative, and it's always great to talk to you, Tom. Time flies
you
when you're here, so I look forward to doing it again soon. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks a lot. That's Tom Appel, folks. He's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and he's the host of the Car Stuff podcast. Again, follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. He's always got a lot of good information, and it's a pleasure to talk to him. So we're going to do this. Then it'll be news time. It's WGN.
My lover stands on golden sand.
Now, are you playing this because I just poured myself a martini and lit up a smoke? Undid my bow tie and I'm ready to cruise for the next 2 hours? Or are we going on a cruise somewhere? No way, I'm not traveling. It's Brian Noonan in for Nick D. Nick taking the week off. I get to spend the mornings with you until Friday. 312-981-7200 is how you get involved in the conversation. And I want to hear from you because while we had some fun with Tom Appel and we kind of brought a little feeling of normalcy, I guess, back to the proceedings, I know that just outside our windows, I'm looking across the river and there is a heart in the hotel windows. It's beautiful. I know in Naperville tonight things got very bad. I know all around the country things are getting bad. And we have endured a weekend of riots and protests here in the Chicago area, and I'm wondering how you're doing, and especially if you're in Naperville tonight, or you're in Aurora, or you're somewhere on the south side or the west side where there was a lot of damage and a lot of looting. I want to hear from you because I'm reading friends' posts on Facebook who live in the city, and you know they're scared. They don't know, and I listen, I don't want to dwell in fear every morning when we're here together, but this is an odd time, and this is something that's going on, and some people are scared, some are angry, some are resigned and just saying, listen, this is how it's going to be, but I'm wondering how you're handling it. This is something, if we can look past what's going on right now, we know that sometime this is going to end. The riots and the protests are going to end. The pandemic hopefully will end, but I have a feeling now with huge groups of people gathering without masks in close proximity, we probably haven't seen the last of COVID-19, but either way, things will get back to normal. And I saw this piece today. It was saying, should you fly yet? Here's what an epidemiologist and an exposure scientist say. And I was like, oh boy, here we go. I don't know about you. I'm willing to travel a little bit. I want to get out. I'm happy things are opening. I'm going to take it slow. That's just me. But I don't know about planes. I just don't know. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And if you want to jump in on that, if you want to jump in on if you're going to travel, or you are always welcome to talk about what is happening right now. I know talking about travel and getting on a plane is looking forward, but we have to keep looking forward. When we talked to Don Fresh from Central Camera earlier, he said you got to look forward. We can't let bad things completely dominate what's going to happen down the road. And things will pass. And it might take a little while for things to get, quote unquote, back to normal or to be okay. But it will. And then we're going to be looking for things to do. Glenn is in Evanston. Hi, Glenn. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, Brian. Love the show.
Thank you.
Everything is great up here in Evanston. I mean, the looters tried coming up here, but the police stopped them dead in their tracks.
Yeah, I saw a lot of reports coming out of Evanston that, things just never got a chance to take hold up there.
That's right.
And how are you feeling otherwise? I mean, obviously, that's great news for the city of Evanston. How are you holding up?
Oh, I'm maintaining. I mean, things could be worse, but at the same time, you know, things are great the way they are.
Yeah, it's that's a good way to look at it. Things could be worse. Things, you know, we're all trying to maintain a little bit. Well, Glenn, I'm glad you're safe. I'm glad things are well up in Evanston.
All right, and Brian, we need to hear more of you on the radio.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Take care, man.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care, bud.
Now, no, that was not one of my brothers, Tom. I know you're always thinking that I pepper the audience with people.
You got to that's
a ringer. Sure. I send out stimulus checks with my name on them to random listeners. I get Nick's mailing list. I look at his Facebook page. I get his friends' names, and then I send them checks and ask them to call in and say that I should be on more. How sad would that be? How thirsty? What am I, an Instagram model? You know, some 20-year-old Instagram girl? I'm not. Am I? I'm thirsty.
Trust me, I've seen them. You are not one of them.
I am not one of them. No, that's pretty much all Instagram is for, isn't it? For girls in bikinis?
And pictures of animals.
Dogs and dogs, dinner, and dames. That should be Instagram's new tagline. Dogs, dinners, and dames. It's all on Instagram, folks.
God.
I'm a marketing genius. I don't know why I'm wasting my time talking to you. I got big ideas. Big ideas. Oh, I don't know. So would you fly? You had a trip planned. You canceled it. I was supposed to go on a trip late in the summer. Got canceled. I'm happy about that. Would you get on a plane now?
That's a tough one.
That's why I asked it.
Exactly. I am leaning towards no. If I can drive, which luckily I'm lucky enough to have a car in good condition. Okay. You know, I'm of sound mind and body.
Let's not get crazy.
All right, sound body.
All right.
And
I did see you doing some calisthenics.
I was.
Old school,
yeah.
Jack LaLanne in there. You're in shape.
Exactly. So if I can drive, at this point, I would prefer to. If I'm going somewhere domestic that's relatively close, I've got my mom lives out in Colorado now.
Okay.
My girlfriend's folks are in Des Moines. That's an easy trip.
Oh, like, that's Des Moines, nothing.
Yeah, you stop in Des Moines on your way to Colorado. You're just a straight shot, basically.
You go Des Moines, then you hit Omaha.
Yeah.
Then you close your eyes, and in about 6 hours, you wake up and you're out of Nebraska. Because really, after Omaha and Lincoln, there's not that it's not beautiful. There's just not a lot to see. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about driving through Nebraska is you can put the club on your car, and it'll just go straight, and you can take a nap.
Very nice.
Because the car that's as close as I'm coming to a self-driving car is going through Nebraska.
Now, I think I might have to take my car to go see the world's biggest ball of twine or some of these roadside attractions that I never got the chance to see.
I love road trips, first of all. And so I'm with you on that. Driving now is going to take the place of flying. For domestic. I might even get one of those Tommy Bartlett water boats if I want to go to one island somewhere. Because one of the ducks. Because I'm not getting on a plane for a while. I wasn't crazy about getting on planes before. Because I was sitting right next to people and it's gross.
Oh, I love planes.
I like the idea of planes.
Sure.
I like that they take me far away. But I don't like the actual experience of sitting in a cigar tube next to somebody who's sweating profusely from God only knows what, and they're getting on me. So that part I don't like. But back to your point about the ball of twine, I've avoided stopping in a lot of those. And I was on the road for years driving all over the country. I remember seeing signs for the Corn Palace, the Ball of Twine, Dino Land when I was driving out to L.A. on the southern route. I just never stop. I don't know why, because I think it all goes back, you know how you hold on to things from when you were a kid? Somehow my dad must have gone, those places are a ripoff. And so even as an adult, I'm like, well, my dad said they were a ripoff when I was three, so I got to take his word for it.
That's the point. They're a ripoff. That's the fun part.
See, but I'll go somewhere. I'd rather go spend my money on something that's, you know, not 100% a ripoff. I did get off the road, and I know this doesn't make me any. All right, we're swerving into something that, why not? Have you been on a road trip and stopped at one of these places, like the world's biggest ball of twine, which is a thing, or the Corn Palace, or what is your favorite weird roadside stop where you knew you were probably going to leave there and go, this place is a ripoff, but it didn't matter? I have one, but we'll get to this was not really a ripoff. This was just, I had to stop in Winslow, Arizona, because everybody who's ever listened to the Eagles, when they're driving through Arizona on 44, heading to either to California or back, goes, I have to stop in Winslow, Arizona, and stand on the corner. And the first time I did it, this is how old I am, Tom. First time I did it, I forget why I was driving back from L.A. by myself. And this was pre-cell phone cameras. This was pre- I tried to take a selfie with just like a disposable Kodak. Didn't work. But then this was also back before Winslow had thought to themselves, you know what, we need to cash in on this little ditty. So now if you go to Winslow, Arizona, there's a Glenn Frey statue right there, and there's a flatbed Ford, so you could take your picture, you know, with your girl, my lord, in her flatbed Ford. You could take your picture there, and they've got the big Route 66 sign in the middle of the... It's a big thing. The first time I was there, it was not. But I want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Your favorite roadside stop. Rip off? Not rip off? I don't know. You tell me. 312-981-7200. It's WGN.
Lindemann Chimney Heating and Cooling. That's right. Lindemann Chimney and Fireplaces. Now, Lindemann Chimney Heating and Cooling. With over 50 years of world-class customer service, trust Lindemann to keep your family safe and comfortable all year long. With summer around the corner, now's the time to get your annual air conditioning tune-up by the pros at Lindemann Chimney Heating and Cooling. Normally $150, but for WGN listeners, just $97. The best $97 you'll spend all year. To schedule, go to Lindemann.com. That's Lindemann.com.
As Illinois reopens, everyone is required to wear masks when going out. Chicago-based EW Masks has you covered. EWMasks.com has a comprehensive selection of face masks at great prices and offers volume discounts. Whether you're an employer and need to buy in bulk for customers and employees as you reopen, or an individual being responsible, make sure you have your protective EW mask every time you go out. Fast shipping to any location or curbside pickup available in Chicago at 1437 West North Avenue. Order now. EWMask.com has you covered.
My name is David Hochberg, and I hope everyone is safe and healthy. In addition to all the essential workers, I want to thank everyone on my team who are essential to helping me help WGN listeners. Every cash out refinance Team Hochberg closes helps WGN listeners lower their monthly payments, which helps them overcome the financial hardships caused by COVID-19. Every rate and term refinance Team Hochberg closes helps WGN listeners lower their monthly payments or pay their loan off faster, which helps them survive or build downline wealth. Every purchase loan Team Hochberg closes helps WGN listeners downsize to reduce their monthly financial burden or lay roots to enjoy future life cycle events. Because of my team's hard work and dedication, Team Hochberg is the trusted lender WGN listeners contact for a mortgage. If you'd like to see if Team Hochberg can help you reduce your monthly payments, please call 855-56-DAVID or visit 56David.com. Tune into Home Sweet Home Chicago, hosted by me, Saturdays at 10 a.m. Homeside Financial, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 112-4061.
Robin Baumgart.
More evacuations were ordered.
She's real.
Thank you.
She's Chicago.
I'm here to speak up for the ladies.
And she's what makes watching news in the morning better.
What am I, your show pony?
Watch Robin and the rest of the WGN-TV morning news team, weekdays 4 to 10.
Killing me. Brian Noonan, in for Nick D. You obviously don't know my my thing with this song, Tom. One of my favorite songs ever. Hall & Oates, Sarah Smile. And the reason that for years, for decades, I held a grudge against Hall & Oates was because they did not play that song when they played at SIU back when I was in college. And so for years, I was angry. 312-981-7200. We're talking about weird roadside attractions, but I also am want to talk to you if you are experiencing any of the rioting or the protests today or earlier tonight. If you are in Aurora, if you're in Naperville, if you're on the south side or the west side, and you saw this, you experienced it. Maybe you're a business owner and your life's work has been destroyed. Or if you just want to get something off your chest, it's a weird time. We fluctuate between being depressed, angry. Sometimes we feel a little bit helpless. I can go through all of those emotions like in an hour. And I think you probably can too. If you watch the news, if you listen to the radio, it's a crazy time. We had a caller, Deanna, from Naperville. She said their windows were broken. What else was going on? And did she say?
Mentioned that maybe a little bit of graffiti, no fires, a few looted stores. She mentioned that Aurora got much more damage.
Aurora took a huge hit yesterday. That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so, I saw Aurora's mayor on television today saying, listen, we're not going to put up with any more of this foolishness. If you come to Aurora, we're ready for you. So he was taking a stand. Paul wants to jump in on our crazy roadside attractions. Hi, Paul. And you are in Naperville.
Yes, I am.
How is it by you?
I didn't hear a thing. I live a couple miles from downtown.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah. My favorite sign is the Big Texan Steakhouse.
Yes.
In Amarillo, Texas.
Home of the 72-ounce challenge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. I love the Big Texan. You start seeing signs for the Big Texan in Oklahoma, and if you don't want to stop for a steak by the time you get to Amarillo, I don't think you're an American, quite frankly. You must.
Yeah, we should explain what the challenge is.
Yes, go ahead. Tell everybody what the big 72-ounce challenge is.
They have a 72-ounce porterhouse steak. If you eat it, they'll give you another one free.
But you can't just eat the steak, right, Paul?
No, you got to eat the whole dinner.
Which there's a potato, there's a shrimp cocktail, there's a roll, and I think there's a salad too.
There's the salad, yes.
Yes, and you have to eat all of it. And what I loved, the first time I was there, somebody was trying to do it. They put them up on an elevated table in the middle of this dining room. And it's both entertaining and disgusting. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I would never try that. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, it's funny because you remember when you walk in, they have one on display. And you just look at it and go, is that for a family? There's no way one person can eat all this meat.
Exactly.
But yes, the big Texan is a definite stop. And the beauty of that is it's literally right off the interstate.
So you
don't have to travel. You just kind of veer your car a little bit to the right or the left, depending on which direction you're coming. And you go, and now they've got... Now they've got like a huge, of course, gift store and all kinds of displays. Yeah. And yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it's quite a place. It's hilarious. I saw somebody try it.
Oh,
didn't make it.
Yeah, I would like to meet somebody who actually could do it. I don't know. I don't know. But Paul, thank you for bringing up such a great memory. I love that place.
You're welcome. It was a fun place.
Yes, it was. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. Yeah, the Big Texan. I've been there twice, and it was fun both times. Because their regular food is pretty good. Now, I know if you live in Amarillo, you probably never go to the Big Texan. Just like you live here, you probably don't go to a lot of places that the tourists like to go. But it's one of those places you have to stop. Oh, now, Doc, we're going to talk to him. He's got one. Now, just in Illinois, I looked this up. Because Tom was talking about the world's biggest ball of twine, which, of course, is in Cawker City, Kansas. In case you were wondering, so if you're traveling on 24 Route 24 somewhere in Kansas and you get to Cawker City, boy, there you go. You can go see the world's biggest ball of twine. Now, I don't know where, I'm trying to see where Cawker City is in relation to the rest of Kansas. It looks as if, well, I can't tell exactly. This map isn't really helping me. It's by Glen Elder. Does that help you? Glen Elder, Kansas?
Very little to me.
Right.
Hopefully
nothing.
The folks in Texas. Or not Texas, Kansas.
Kansas. Oh, it's so if you're, it's north, it's pretty well north of I-70. So if you're shooting across I-70, you know, maybe you get off at 81, you head north to 24 over in Milton Vale. Then you go through Glasgow, of course, and Asherville, Glen Elder, and then you get to the world's largest ball of twine. Then you can just drop down 281 and get back right on 70. You get a nice swath of Kansas there.
Love it.
Maybe you see Dorothy, the Wizard of Oz.
Tornado or two?
Yeah, sure. You get caught up in a twister, you and Auntie M on your bike, with the basket just pedaling along. I know Auntie M didn't ride the bike. That was the Wicked Witch. But listen, yeah, I know. I
fudge it. Fudge the truth.
Listen, we're just having fun. I didn't pass it off as fact. Brian Noonan spreading fake news about the Wizard of Oz nightly on WGN. No, that's not what I was doing at all. just made a little mistake. Doc wants to jump in. Doc, I've always wanted to go to this place.
I don't know which one you're talking about, but I was telling Tom, if he's driving across Nebraska, there's the Sand Hills, famous for the Sand Hill Cranes. And then in western Nebraska is Carhenge.
That's the one.
Looks like Stonehenge, but made out of cars.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go there, and I never have. Is it? It sounds like it would be kind of cool, but only for about three minutes.
And it's kind of like the Cadillacs buried down there by Amarillo.
Yes.
There's nothing commercial, no tickets to buy or whatever. It's just out off of a road, and you just stop and look at it and take some pictures.
Yeah, and then you move on, but it's fun.
Yeah. But, you know, I've driven 2 million miles plus around this great land of ours, and I was telling Tom the best thing to do is get you a AAA card and go get tour guides for the states you're going to go through.
Yeah.
Because it'll list a lot of the good obscure things. And then I stop at the old state tourist centers and just grab folders.
Okay.
But I think I've talked to you once before about the famous 7-day, 5,600-mile vacation I took with a guy from England that I know from Boy Scouts, and we're both in our 60s now. But first day, we drove through Mitchell, South Dakota, and stopped and looked at the Corn Palace, and then drove all the way, and then stopped at Wall Drug,
yes,
and drove all the way to Rapid City. The next day, we saw the mountain at Crazy Horse, then drove through Devil's Tower while the motorcycle rally was going on, and then made it to the east side of Yellowstone, then spent the next day at Yellowstone, got us a pint of Old Faithful and took a shot while we watched Old Faithful. And that, to me, is one of the coolest places to go just for the variety.
Yeah.
The proverbial geysers, mud pots, fumaroles. You know, it's the world's largest concentration of geothermal energy. Not to mention the elk and buffalo. We stopped our car and all these people were going up a hill to take a picture of a black bear.
Wow.
It's like he's not on the payroll, folks.
Yeah.
And then we left and went down through Jackson Hole. And this guy has taken school groups to soccer and ski trips all over Europe. So we went to Aspen, and it was in July, but the ski lifts run to the top. Then I took him to Telluride to show him a good hippie ski town. Then we drove all the way to Vegas. I told him, when you go to Vegas, you need to arrive at night.
Yes.
Saw the Hoover Dam, came out of there, went to Four Corners, Grand Canyon, and then we finished at Carlsbad and May to September. The bats are living in the cave, so you tour the caverns during the day and then go back at dusk and watch half a million bats fly out of it. But I told him, I said, you're going to see several things. The average American only sees a couple of these.
Yeah, it sounds, Tom, it sounds like Doc needs to be your tour guide.
I might.
Doc's the guy.
When you're coming through Chicago, I'm just going to hop in. I'm just going to get it.
And then, you know, my favorite things are the natural things. Like, my favorite place is Niagara Falls. That's where I got married. Yeah. But, like, the Meteor Crater in Arizona. But the strict tourist trap, which was your initial question,
yes.
I went to a place in Wisconsin, and here's this, everything's by itself, no people or anything, but here's a big blue barn, and it says, Roots of Art, ain't nothing like it in New York. And then they had these benches with concretions. And I don't know if you know what they are, but they're rocks.
I was just going to ask, what is concretion?
They're rocks that are made by volcanic lava being pushed up through a lake bed.
Okay.
And they're twisted, and some of them look exactly like a small breast with a nipple.
Hello.
But they had a price thing there, and they had a milk can chained to a post. And it was all, it says honor system. It says our honor system works about 70% of the time. And I got about 10 of them and threw 10 bucks in the milk can.
There you go.
But that was one of the coolest, just, and that's something you would never know about it unless you're just driving by and stopped to look at it.
See, and I think, Doc, those are kind of the best things. Thank you for the virtual tour. I appreciate it. Now Tom is remapping his route.
I think so. I want to see those
well, you know what? Everybody ought to see this country from sea to shining sea. And you get out there in Colorado and go, wow, it really is Purple Mountains Majesty.
Yeah.
And I remember I spent 2 years as a professional mystery shopper. And I used to buy KFC 300 times a month and drove 12 to 14,000 miles a month.
Wow.
Different motel every night. So in 2 years, I drove 300,000 miles. This was 85 to 87 when I was single. But I remember being in Wyoming and the deer and the antelope play. I counted 400 pronghorn antelope in a day and a half.
That is the life, Doc.
It's the Miley's between towns. I mean, I love the West, the Southwest, the Rockies, you know.
Yeah.
I haven't been up in Washington and Oregon. That's kind of the one quadrant I haven't been in.
Well, listen, I know Tom's looking for a road trip, so, you know,
there
it is. I'll go. I'm ready.
You would tell
me. There's some guys in Kansas that they do tours. One of them is in like a Cadillac, but another one, they'll take you out in an Airstream trailer, and they'll drive you anywhere you want to go.
That sounds fun.
I always wanted to be in
one of those Airstreams.
Do they do honeymoons?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, take the message.
Because this Airstream's a rocking.
Yeah, wow. I was going to say, you want to celebrate.
Boots are knocking.
You want to celebrate your nuptials in front of some guy,
yeah.
Gus, who's driving you around into the Airstream?
Yeah.
Are there wedding bells in Tom's future?
I don't know. He might have just spilled some beans.
That's my business, Doc. I'm gonna play that one close to the vest.
We got married in the tower that overlooks Niagara Falls. So you walk out this pier, and it goes up 5 stories to an observation tower and down 9 stories to the base of the river, and it's on the American side. And if you know the falls, the river splits at a thing called Goat Island, and to the left is the Horseshoe Falls, which is the Canadian side, 2,800 feet in a big circle, and to the right is 1,000 linear feet of falls, the American Falls. And this guy, he's a TV weatherman in Buffalo, New York, but he's also a minister. And he and his partner have had exclusive rights to perform weddings up in that tower. So
nice.
It was my wife and I, him, and his partner's wife was our certified witness, playing the processional on the boombox. And we're wearing brand new $100 Superman hockey jerseys, new jeans, new tennis shoes. And I give this minister, Barry, I said, Barry, everybody needs to start their Superman collection sometime. And gave him a Superman shirt, white, red collar. He says, I think I'll just wear that.
There you go.
That over his collar and put his sport coat back on. And then we got a thing, this is for Tom's benefit, called the Chamber of Commerce, got a certificate that we honeymooned in the honeymoon capital of the world.
There you go.
Stayed in a nice hotel, had the only room on that floor, heart-shaped jacuzzi. Yeah.
Wow. All right. I think you're going to delve into details we don't need to get into, Doc. But
there you go.
I appreciate the stories. Thanks for the call.
All right. Good talking to you, Brian.
Take care, buddy. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Now, listen, get a heart-shaped jacuzzi. Boom. I don't know what that means. It means we got to do this. Then we're talking about all kinds of things. We're talking about crazy roadside stops. I found a bunch just in Illinois. You may not have to go for the ball of twine. We'll talk about that. I still want to talk to you if you were bothered by what's happening this weekend, if you want to vent, if you're mad, if you're sad, if you're angry, if you're scared, we're here. We're all, while we are all in the same storm together, granted we are not all in the same boat, but we are all in the same storm. So consider this, oh boy, I was going to be real corny and go, consider this your refuge for the storm. And then I was going to put a bullet in my head for being so corny. But you get the point, all right? Let's do this. Yeah, Brian Noonan in for Nick. Time when flugelhorns made a big, big splash in the US of A. Chuck Mangione, WGN. There's no lyrics here, so it's hard to hit the post. There it is. There was the post. But I wasn't going to talk about it. I don't have time to talk up Chuck Mangione's crazy flugelhorn solos.
Is that what he plays? Is the flugelhorn?
The flugelhorn. That's right. Flugelhorn. Okay. And there was a time, boy, this was, what, 76, when Chuck Mangione put his big hat and beard on display and went around? See when that came out? I don't know. I think it was late 70s. The Chuck Mangione. 312-981-7200. Brian Noonan in for Nick. All right, we started talking about if you were ready to fly. Tom and I both have decided we are not ready to fly. Epidemiologists say, you know, it's risky. You should call ahead, see if the airlines are doing anything to keep you 6 feet apart. They say taking the window seat is a good guess or a good bet. But then they also say, bring your own sanitizer, bring your own wipes, do your best, wear a mask. It's too much of a hassle. I'm going to get in the car. I'm going to travel. We have to go the end of this month. We're driving down to New Orleans. I can't wait. But I'm driving. It's like a 12-hour drive. I don't care. I used to drive all over. There's something about a road trip that is, it's freeing. It's something, it's, I don't know. To me, it feels really Americana to get in the car and drive. Because when I was a kid, and maybe you were like this too, when we would take vacations, it was always by car. I didn't fly, Tom. I was not in an airplane till after I graduated from college.
Really?
Yes. I thought planes were the work of the devil, that man was not supposed to be up in the sky. If we were supposed to be up there, we would have had wings.
I didn't think that they had invented flight by 1837.
Well, I was on the third flight that Orville and Wilbur put together. You know the three-tiered wing jobber?
Yeah.
That you always see in the bloopers where the wings cave in and the guy crashes?
Mm-hmm.
That's me if you look closely.
Oh,
I was wearing a big raccoon fur coat, and I had a pennant that said, rah, rah, rah. And I was flying off to the Army-Navy game. So it was an unbelievable flight. It lasted 6.3 seconds.
Oh, wow. Not
and then
too
I
bad.
Crashed. Well, not too bad, except I had like a 5-hour drive after that.
Let me throw this to you. Take Please. A guess at what age I was in a plane for the first time. And this was an international flight. International flight.
Commercial airline?
Yep.
Okay. 6 months. 6 months old.
Hit the nail on the head.
Is that right?
Yeah. Try to guess. And we'll follow this up with, where do you think I was going?
Prison. No, wait. Where were you going?
Where was I going? At 6 months old.
At 6 months old, you were probably going to a World Cup soccer match.
Not quite.
Okay.
We were going to Singapore.
Really?
Yeah. They used to have these like baby baskets.
They were going to send you down the river like Moses?
No, sort
Your
of.
Parents were going to abandon you in Singapore?
And on the plane, my parents did not hold me. They literally was a basket at the back of the cabin. There's plop you right in there. And I slept the whole time. The flight attendants would come and check on me.
Wait,
my
so
parents
your
parents were up there sipping champagne, hanging out.
Wait, so the babies and I just, were I was all just put like, in the back?
Well, like, just me.
On towel racks? What was...
I was next to the hand luggage.
This is a bizarre tale. I didn't even know that was a thing, that they would put babies in baskets on a plane and send them somewhere. All right, yeah, I didn't... it was... Well, we... You know, I have four brothers. So I can't be the only one who never took a plane ride until I was older. You know, we were a car family. We got it. We would drive out to the East Coast. We would drive wherever we were going on vacation. My dad would scream and yell at us and smoke. And the five of us would be in the back fighting over who had to sit on the hump and who got to sit in the way back, as we like to call the station wagon, the third seat, the way back. And that was it. But this thing about hanging a baby off a hook in the back of a plane seems weird.
Come on.
It sounds like Nancy and Sluggo, where they put you in a dresser drawer and just shoved you in the overhead compartment or something. I find this disconcerting.
It was specifically designed for babies.
Was this just on Singapore Airlines?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Maybe. Well, wait a minute. You and I are vastly different in age. I'm 93 and you're 16.
True.
So, when was this? When would you have been 6 months old?
So this would have been mid to late 90s.
All right. I was flying by then. I never saw babies in a basket.
That's it. Well, you weren't flying 24 hours. That's a 24-hour flight.
From here to Singapore?
Basically, yeah.
Why? And again, what? Because I know you weren't going to Singapore just to hang in a basket.
No. My dad did a lot of work in Asia.
Okay.
He did a lot of work in Asia and brought my mom and me with. And my mom tells story. There's great pictures of me of like just random people just holding me because that's kind of the culture there. It's a little bit more of a it takes a village sort of thing. So my mom would get really freaked out because I'd be in the pram. I'd be in the stroller.
I love that you use the word pram because there's one of those in my mom's garage, the pram that I was paraded around the neighborhood in, and nobody calls it a pram.
Oh, it's a pram.
It's a little buggy, you know, a little, very nice.
Very nice, the pram.
Well, that's very continental. It's very European British. To call it a pram. Yes, British. My nanny would wheel me around. Mary Poppins took me to the park in my pram. Yes.
But so, she'd push me around, and then she'd stop for a second, maybe like they're in the street market, something like that. Yeah. And a woman would see me, and she'd just pick me up. Like,
try to kidnap you?
No. Just hold me. Just to admire and be like, oh, what a beautiful baby. And my mom would freak out, and my dad would say, no, don't. This is very respectful. This is someone saying, oh, look how beautiful your baby is. I have to hold him.
Or look how beautiful your baby is. I could get a lot of money for this kid.
I was a little on the tubby side. I don't know.
Well, they weren't selling you by the pound. They were just selling you as a package deal. It was like, we have American babies, $6.99 a pound. Just buy the whole thing.
Yeah, we'll cut you a good deal.
Yeah, we'll get you a good deal. We'll discount it if you buy the whole baby. We don't want to sell just a piece of the baby. Wow, that took a weird turn, didn't it? Almost as if you had gone to the Museum of Initiation Pranks in Greenville, Illinois. Tour the company that built prank devices for fraternal lodge initiations. Visitors could experience the branding iron, the bucking goat, and the spanking machine. All sound like things you can experience somewhere else. I love how you distance yourself from that all.
I was in a fraternity, so.
What is the bucking goat a fraternity?
I don't know.
That sounds horrible.
I don't know about the bucking goat, but I did get locked in a room for 2 to 3 hours listening to Revolution Number 9 on repeat.
And now, granted, I will full disclosure: I was not in a fraternity. When I was at, I went to Southern Illinois. The fraternities were not a big thing down there when I was there. Yeah,
I would have guessed that. I'm not saying it would have been huge.
No,
but
a lot of guys think I would have met a good fraternity guy, but I wouldn't have. I didn't like it. No.
You wouldn't have been Bluto?
I was Bluto. I just didn't have the restrictions of having to wear letters on my shirt. Here's the thing about me, Tom. I don't need the approval of a group of dudes to go out and get sloppy drunk and smash a guy's guitar on a stairwell.
Fair enough.
I do that all by myself because I'm a grown man. But so the fraternity system when I was at Southern was so small that they were targets, actually.
Wow.
Yes, because back in those days at McAndrew Stadium, which was not really a stadium, it was glorified. Now they have a beautiful stadium at Southern. But back then it was basically a giant high school field with the metal bleachers. And you could bring coolers in there, which, of course, were filled with beer. And when the fraternities would come in, they would come in, you know how fraternities travel, like in packs, like migratory animals.
Something like a murder of crows.
A murder of crows or a gaggle of goofs, whatever you want to call them. Well, then they would be pelted with the ice and the styrofoam coolers. So, I wasn't in a fraternity. My brothers were in fraternities. Friends of mine were in fraternities. And I get it on one level. Like, when you're adults and networking, that all makes sense. But when you're 19 and a guy's forcing you to crawl around on the ground and act like a goat and you're locked in a room for 2 hours, and then they might not even take you? I'm like, nah. I'm out. And I know before people get upset, and 312-981-7200, you can defend your Greek letters all day. That's cool. I don't know why you'd put yourself through that. And I do know at some universities, if you're not in the Greek system, you really don't have a social life. So I'm jaded that way too, because there was a big social life without that where I went. But what frat are you in?
I'm not going to say.
Oh.
It's probably best.
Delta Zeta? Alpha Beta?
Lambda, Lambda, Lambda.
Lambda, Lambda.
All I'm going to say, you asked why someone would be in a fraternity?
Yeah.
Chicks, man.
Really?
Chicks.
Like fraternity guys dressed as chicks?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, they tar and
the
feather you.
The annual talent show? All right. They tar and feather you. That's fantastic. On that note, let's take a break, and let's try to scrub our brains of the image of Tom, all covered in tar and feathers, pretending he's a chick for his frat brothers. We're talking about all different kinds of things. We've got fraternities. We've got wild roadside attractions. We've got Are You Ready to Fly Again? And, of course, ongoing anything you want to vent about the events of this last weekend. And also, I should say, Chuck Mangione is also on the agenda, and that's what Mark wants to talk about. He is in Aurora. Hi, Mark. Everything safe tonight in Aurora?
As far as I can tell, last night at about this time, there was smoke coming through my window.
Ugh. Yeah, last
which
night
probably means that there was a fire going on someplace in town, but tonight things sound quiet, but Chuck Mangione went to the Eastman School of Music, and there's, if you can still get it on Amazon, there's an album that he released called Friends and Love, and it was released in the spring of 70, and it's a live concert in the Eastman Theater at the Eastman School of Music. And the reason that I checked into all this is that I grew up in the Buffalo area,
okay,
and we had a 50,000-watt station there, which kind of corresponds to WGN, but not quite. It was beamed northeast and south, and so at night it covered Canada and the eastern United States. Well, eastern, northeast, southeast Canada and the eastern United States, and in June of 1971, the program director decided on a little departure from format. Creative guy that Jeff Kay was, he decided to play a cut from that album called Hill Where the Lord Hides. So we were hearing him in the Buffalo area and way beyond at night via WKBW, which used to stand for Well-Known Bible Witness. And then the KB in WKBW came to stand for King of Buffalo.
Wow.
And then in the mid-80s, they became WWKB because they were bought out by Price Communications. But in June of 71 and probably May and July as well, Chuck Mangione was being played on WKBW. And I'm surprised he didn't catch on wider back then. The song that you refer to, Feels So Good, is probably trumpet, because he played both trumpet and flugelhorn.
Oh, okay.
And that was charting in the spring of 1978.
78.
So consider that 7-year gap between getting played on WKBW with his more symphonic jazz and then getting played on national radio in spring of 78 with what might be called smooth jazz.
Right.
But Chuck Mangione is now 79 years old.
Wow. All right, now we all feel old.
The Mange.
Now we all feel old, Mark. Thank you. Wow.
No, WKBW was a lot like WGN in those days, doing a lot of creative things on the radio. The main difference was that they were a beamed signal rather than a non-directional signal, which is what WGN
yes.
is.
We go everywhere.
Yeah, we do.
If you're out there, we're going to find you.
Although a beam signal gets more intensified in the direction in which it's being beamed. There was a party of Scandinavians who came to Hamburg, New York, where the KB antenna array is, because they wanted to photograph it and analyze it electronically. And they could pick up KB in Scandinavia in the winter, apparently, pretty well.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Mark. I am huge in Scandinavia, so it's very exciting. Thank you for the call. Stay safe at Aurora. I appreciate it. I can't believe 78 that song came out. Feels So Good, Chuck Mangione. Dude, I thought I could have sworn that was part of the big was. I thought it was part of the big bicentennial thing. Maybe there was somebody else.
The bicentennial?
That was 1976, Tom. The
right.
Bicentennial.
You know, I understand what a bicentennial is.
We were formed as a country in 1776. You might have heard of it. Declaration of Independence, Constitution, the whole big thing.
Tea parties.
Tea parties. The British are coming, blah, blah, blah. Little quick history lesson.
Just American history in 10 seconds.
Flat. Hamilton, Jefferson, I saw it. I saw the play. I was in the room where it happens. But, yeah, that I thought that was a bicentennial thing.
Later than that.
Yeah, but there had to be somebody else then. There was some other instrumental dude who was around. Who did the Spirit of Philadelphia? Can you look that up?
Spirit of Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think that was maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Because, listen, 76, I was a young boy. I wasn't paying attention. I was listening to the top 40 hits on my transistor radio, trying to call in the disc jockeys to play America, Sister Goldenhair for me.
Ah, that's a great song.
It's a great song.
I had totally forgotten it existed until about a year ago.
Oh, how can you forget America? Really? They're named after our country.
I know, but I was thinking more Horse with No Name.
Love that one, too.
Great.
America had some good songs. That's all that soft rock. You know what I do now,
yacht rock.
Tom? I listen to a lot of yacht rock. I sit in the backyard after a hard day of mowing the grass or whatever, and I sit on the deck and I listen to yacht rock and
Christopher Cross.
Sure, Christopher Cross, a little Michael McDonald. Maybe you get some Boz Scaggs thrown in.
Andrew Gold.
Sure, everybody.
Lonely Boy?
Of course. Oh, what a lonely boy. And I sit there and I sing it really loud. I guess last week I was cutting the grass, and I always have my earbuds in. And I guess at some point I was singing pretty loudly. I didn't realize it. And if you can hear me over the lawnmower, you know I was belting out some hit. Molly called me on that, my daughter. Because Saturday when I went out to cut the grass, she goes, you know, if you sing again, the neighbors can hear you like they did last week. And I'm like, well, then tell him to buy a ticket because daddy's got to belt it out. And then the Doobie Brothers came on and Old Black Water, and the whole neighborhood stood, turned around, ran back in their houses and closed the door. It was fascinating.
If you could be a Doobie Brother, which Doobie you be?
I'd be that the long-haired guy with the Fu Manchu. I think he was a bass player.
Okay.
I think that's who I'd be. I don't want to be Michael McDonald. Too much pressure.
Yeah. Well,
plus, I can't get my voice that high. I'm not going to besmirch the vocal talents of Michael McDonald by saying that
Never.
I could even try to be as close as that. It's hypnotic. His voice makes you all moist inside. Makes you want to put on some deck shoes and just sit out with your shirt unbuttoned down to your waist.
Let me throw this at you,
please.
For Michael McDonald's career, what was the best part of it? Was it the Doobie Brothers?
Oh boy, here
was
we go.
Was it solo or was it with Steely Dan?
Steely.
He would play. Dan. He played with Steely Dan.
Hmm.
Where does Michael McDonald peak?
All right. Well, here's the thing. I'm going to have to discount the Steely Dan part because I was not familiar.
You were not aware of it.
Was not aware. So I got to take that out. I loved Michael McDonald with the Doobie Brothers. However, some of his solo hits charted much higher, and he went on to a level. Like a lot of guys who leave a band then go on to big solo careers,
sure.
Almost eclipsing their stuff with the band. Phil Collins, for example.
After he ruined Genesis.
Sure, after he ruined Genesis. I'm not saying he was right. I'm just saying this is what happened. He went on and had a huge solo career. Some would argue maybe bigger than Genesis at that time. You know? Because Genesis, after Peter Gabriel left, Genesis was a shell of what it once was. They went from prog rock to claymation videos. So, I don't know. How do you compare them? You don't. But we do, because that's what we do here. All right, listen. On the other side of the news, I got very excited, and I think you will too. There's big news out of the candy world. So we're going to talk a little candy after 3 o'clock, which comes after the news, which comes after this on WGN. Brian Noonan in for Nick. Nick will be back next week. He's taking this week off, and I have the pleasure of spending the rest of the week with you. 312-981-7200. That's how you get a hold of me, and I want to hear what's going on where you are right now. We are always, throughout the night, taking your calls if you want to vent a little bit. Tell us what happened in your area tonight, whether there were protests or riots or if everything was calm, and how you're doing, how you're getting through this. Because it is, it's... it sounds trite at times to say these are weird times that we're going through, but they are weird times that we're going through. None of us have been through this before. You know, a combination pandemic and social unrest, that doesn't happen too often. And it seems like we've forgotten that the pandemic is still happening. Now, I just heard in the news, the doctors telling us, no, the pandemic is still here. Today, I saw a lot of people out without face coverings. And I don't know if they all just went, oh, you know what, with everything else going on, we just forgot. But that's that. All right, if you could get away from all this, if you could go back to being a child and you could get your favorite candy, I'm wondering what you would head for if you went back to that big childhood candy store that you used to visit. And the reason, oh, wait a minute. Do we have more Chuck Mangione news? This is, listen, folks, we are always trying to figure out. Chuck, if you could get Chuck Mangione while I'm here this week, Tom, that would be fantastic. But he's got to have the flugelhorn and the trumpet at the ready just to do a little something. All right, Phil is in Elmhurst. I don't know. He's got something to add with Chuck Mangione. Good morning, Phil. Good
morning. Just wanted to let you know, Feels So Good came out December 6, 1977.
All right, I was closer then, 77.
Yeah, and he had a bunch of other albums in there. He had one called Chase the Clouds Away. He had one called Bella Via. And there were a couple other ones that I can't think of right now. I actually saw him up in Ravinia, about 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
He was, and it was kind of cool. During Bella Via, he brought his dad up on stage and danced with him.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. You know, it's one, Chuck Mangione's one of those guys because I don't listen to a lot of jazz. So I only remember that song, but I know he's been around forever and he's got, a huge catalog of music. It's just one of those things. I know him for one song, which I thought erroneously came out in 76, but came out in 77.
Yeah. And are you familiar with what a drum and bugle corps is?
I am.
Okay. There's a drum and bugle corps from Concord, California, the Blue Devils. And back in the early 70s, a lot of their repertoire was Mangione music.
Really?
And they were out practicing one day, and Mangione just happened to be driving by fairly close and slammed on the brakes. Hey, I recognize that. He actually came back, and he actually ended up for the next couple of years, bopping in and out and working with the kids.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That is hilarious. Well, Phil, thank you for enlightening me and sharing some Chuck Mangione news and information.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Take care. We are your Chuck Mangione news and information station.
Well, would you like a little WGN Chuck Mangione trivia?
Yeah, sure. Love it.
So the great Amy Guth, who has been on the station many, many times, fills in from time to time. Many people have hotkeys here at the station.
A little
bit of inside baseball here. You've got your own page for hotkeys.
Oh, I've got a big page of hotkeys.
Yeah.
To go with my hot takes.
Exactly. Nick has got his own huge pages of hotkeys, the different sounders, yes. All that kind of stuff. Amy Guth has her own page of hotkeys.
Yeah.
It is two hotkeys, which is It Feels So Good by Chuck Mangione and a slightly shorter version of Feels So Good by Chuck Mangione. Those are the only two hot keys she has.
That's the funny part. The short key, the short Feels So Good, was over 7 minutes, and the long version was over 9 minutes.
I know.
That's a lot of Feels So Good.
It's a lot of Mangione.
It is. It's Mangione overdrive. Some might say too much Mangione. I would not be one of those people. All right, now back to this candy fantasy that I have, where we're all children and we get to go back and find our favorite candies. And you might think, why are you bringing this up at 3:13 on a Tuesday morning, Brian? Because big news, very exciting. Necco wafers are coming back. Are you a Necco wafer fan, Tom?
Big fan.
Look at that. We have something in common. Finally, I thought Necco wafers would be too old for you. That it was something you would feed your grandparents.
Well, I mean, yes, but also I love them too.
Good for you. I love so Necco wafers are coming back. The Spangler Candy Company, which sounds like a made up movie name, you know, like a Chris Farley movie. I work for the Spangler Candy Company. But no, they announced that the flavored discs are coming back. Spangler purchased the brand 2 years ago and has been working on its return. That seems like a long time for Necco wafers, which, as much as I love them, they don't seem to have much to them. You know, a flat disc of questionable flavors, but there's something terrific about them. They should be in stores across the nation by June. Today is what, Tom? June 1st. That's right. So it's time to start looking.
June 2nd.
Oh, that's right. It's June 2nd. I came in on June 1st. Time travel, I've never liked time travel movies, and I don't like time travel in real life. So that's it. Necco wafers were created when? 1847.
The year of your birth.
The year of my birth. In celebration, the Necco company made wafers, and then I used to use them in the toll booths. Back
Now, is that true? I have
that
heard that.
That is true.
You could get away with throwing a Necco wafer into the toll.
That was back before computers and stuff.
Sure.
That's when they had monkeys actually inside the booth. And if something round came in, the monkey would hit the lever and the gate would go up.
Well, so you're basically bribing him with Necco wafers.
You bribe a monkey. I don't know what they did with the coins. I think they trained the monkeys just to put them in a sack. But if the Necco wafer came down, the monkey knew it could eat it, and then the gate would go up that much faster. So you didn't have to wait.
Genius.
Well, listen, there's always ways to beat the system. The man's trying to get as much money out of you as he can. Right now the Illinois Tollway System is like, you can't use Necco. I know. I don't condone that at all. Now I have an iPass. I have no need for Necco wafers for, transit purposes. I only have a need for them for, fun and enjoyment. I love the wax paper that they came wrapped in, very old school. That's why I like so that's the question. I'm excited that these old-timey candy is coming back. And I like to say old-timey. I don't know why. Maybe you do too. What would you like to see come back candy-wise? Or what do you go for when you need to feel a little bit of nostalgia? When you need to feel like a kid and you want a piece of candy? Do you go for something that's readily available? Do you grab a Snickers or a Reese's peanut butter cup or one of those? And those are all fine. But there's something else. We'll run down some of those and get your thoughts. 312-981-7200. Lot to get to before we get out of here at 4 o'clock. It's WGN. All right, we're talking about how excited we are that Necco wafers are coming back. Tom and I finally finding common ground. What is your go-to nostalgia candy? Maybe you're excited about Necco wafers too. Maybe you can't. Necco wafers are one of those candies that draw a lot of debate, I think, like candy corn, because some people love them and other people despise them. I fall on the pro Necco wafer, pro candy corn, pro circus peanut side of the candy debate. I like all of those, hotly debated, but that's all. The other one that I could go to. That immediately makes me feel like a kid are those candy dots on the paper, like a CVS receipt full of candy dots. I don't know why I still like it. It's some things make an impression on you when you are young. And even as an adult, you try them and you go, oh, boy, I've had a lot better candy or a lot better pizza or a lot better whatever since I was a kid. But there's always something about the taste, the memories, the nostalgia that product brings, whether it's, as I said, candy or pizza or anything. Pop, I used to, when I was a kid, it was all about the real sweet pop, whether it was orange soda or grape soda or something like that, orange pop, grape pop. And then you get older and you're like, boy, that's like drinking syrup. I can't do it anymore. But every once in a while, a really cold orange pop just hits the spot. A nice bottle of Orange Crush, and things are good.
Are you a Green River person?
I'm ambivalent about the Green River. We drank Green River a lot as kids. My mom still loves Green River. Every once in a while, just for fun, we'll bring her a big bottle of Green River just to see how she reacts. But it was never It was around, but we didn't drink a lot of brand name pop when I was a kid because there were so many of us and we drank pop like it was water. So it was all a lot of yummy brand pop from Juul. And this was back in the day when you still had to use the church key to open the can. So you had to do the two triangle openings at the top of the yummy pop can. So it was orange yummy, grape yummy, and then sometimes, if we were feeling adventurous, root beer. But never the cola. Because little kids don't really like cola. And in our house, the only cola growing up was Pepsi. And that was because that's what my dad liked. And we'd get the eight pack of glass bottles, and those would sit in the hallway, and those were just for him. Because you didn't mess with the Pepsi. You got your own. Go drink that orange pop over there. That Pepsi for your father. But then we got older and bigger than him, and we drank whatever we wanted. No, that's not true. But we got older, and he realized, oh, they like Pepsi too? All right, get 2 8-packs when we go to the store, and maybe only one case of orange pop from Juul. Oh, Leslie wants to jump in. She's in Ohio. Hi, Leslie.
Hey, I have two of them for you.
All right.
The first one is around a little bit. It's not completely discontinued, but it's hard to find. And those are Mallow cups. You know what those are?
Are those, they're comparable to Reese's, but it's marshmallow instead of peanut butter, right? Or
exactly.
Am I wrong?
And no, you're absolutely exact.
Okay.
And then there's another one that's made of butterscotch, and I forget what those are called.
Butterscotch. Is it not the hard candy butterscotches?
No. It's in the cups like the...
I never had... I don't know those.
The Mallow cup.
It's like a Mallow cup with butterscotch?
Well, no, instead of chocolate, it was like a butterscotch, and it had a different filling in it too.
Oh wow! Now did you grow up in Ohio? Was that like a regional treat?
I grew up in Ontario, so maybe that accounts for some of it.
Okay.
I don't know. But I have one more that I would kill to find.
Uh-oh.
Kill to find. About 10 years ago, Reese's Pieces.
Yeah.
Made some that have nuts in them, whole nuts. You know, the peanut butter candy shell around peanuts.
Ooh.
They only had them like one Halloween for some reason, and they disappeared.
Yikes.
I never
had those, but now I can't stop wanting them.
Exactly. That's what happened.
You have piqued my desire, Leslie. All right, well, we will go on a search together. Tom is Googling like crazy for these Reese's Pieces with nuts in them.
Sounds good. Hard to find information, too. It was about 10 years ago, and they were only available one Halloween, and that was here in Ohio.
Well, listen, Leslie, Tom knows people who know candy people. We'll see what we can do.
Okay.
If we find out, we'll let everybody know, and you can, we'll try to get you some in Ohio.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, thanks for filling in,
Leslie.
For Nick.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks for the call. Take care. Have you heard of those Reese's Pieces with nuts in them?
I think so. It's kind of ringing a bell.
All right. I'm a big. I like nuts. I like a Payday. I like a Zag Nut. That was wrong.
Straight out of context next week.
I guess. So Zag Nuts, Paydays, I enjoy a nice Payday. I like the, do you remember Chunkies?
Chunkies.
Chunkies were just a big block of chocolate. They were named perfectly because they were just a chunk. It was in a silver foil wrapper and it weighed about 118 pounds and it was only about 2 inches square, but it was dense.
Mm-hmm.
And they came either plain with nuts or with raisins. And every once in a while, somebody would try to sneak a raisin one by you. And that I did not abide because I don't need that. I don't need that kind of thing. So Necco wafers are coming back. What do you wish would come back? Or what candy do you crave just to bring back a little bit of your childhood? Just to make you feel... a little more carefree in these troubled times. Mike's in Michigan City. Hey, Mike.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are things in Michigan City? You guys were getting some protests yesterday, right?
It wasn't much. There were 400 people. They marched down the Lighthouse Place. They couldn't get in. They broke one window on a tire store and one window in a liquor store, and that was about it.
Okay, well, thankfully that's all that happened, so that's good.
Yeah, but I've got three candies that I loved as a kid.
All right, let's hear them.
Chuckles. Those were five.
I know.
Do you remember the five pieces, different colors there?
Yeah, I got to tell you.
Jelly with sugar on top.
A lot of sugar on top. I remember them, and they were, I got to tell you, Mike, not my favorites.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
How about a Forever Yours?
Wait a minute. That one had a couple different flavors, right? Is that right?
It was just a Milky Way with dark chocolate instead of milk chocolate.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
All right, I'm thinking of the wrong thing. All right, so that's two. Chuckles, the Forever Yours.
And watermelon slices.
Oh, with the, those are kind of like Chuckles, though, right?
I think so. They looked like a watermelon slice. They were pink, and there was a little band of white, and then green on the outside.
Yeah, and there was covered. Were they covered in sugar too?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, you're a jellied candy man. That's what I'm getting from you, Mike.
I guess I never thought about it like that.
Listen. Everybody's got their own thing, and I know my mom and dad loved Chuckles. That's why I know they were always in the house. And if I was desperate, I would take one. But I never found them as satisfying as I'm more of a chocolate guy, I guess. But that's,
yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of like a payday guy now. But what the heck?
Yeah. Paydays are good. Paydays quality candy, Mike. You're onto something now. But see, that's the beauty of it. The candy aisle is so huge, so that Mike can go get his Chuckles and his watermelon slices, and I can get my Chunky, and everybody leaves happy.
Yeah, that's true.
Perfect. Perfect. Mike, thanks for the call.
Okay. Have a good one.
You too. Do you like the jellied candies?
A little bit too much, my dentist used to tell me as a kid.
Really?
Yeah, it was bad. And I still have to be careful around gummies and all that kind of stuff. I'm a sucker for like Haribo gummies.
Really?
A total sucker.
Oh, I can't eat them.
I'm not going to lie. One time I got one of those big bags. And I ate like the whole thing in one go.
Wow.
It's like an addiction.
That's crazy.
I cannot have them in the house.
Well, then I'm going to cancel the big order I had for tomorrow night. 15 pounds of those babies coming.
Because
I know I won't eat them.
You won't do Haribo?
I don't like anything gummy.
Really?
I don't like, yeah. And my wife, you know, my wife and daughter like the gummy bears. They like Swedish fish. Like all that stuff.
Can't do you need the chocolate.
Yeah, chocolate or peanuts. I like a good nougat, but there's just something I don't know what it is. I'm not saying people are wrong. I've tried them. They're just not my thing. They're not my cup of tea.
I will say, speaking about the Reese's pieces with nuts.
Yes, with the nuts in them.
They did exist. As far as I know, you can't get them anymore.
All right, so Leslie was not hallucinating, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's good.
Closest you can get is the Reese's Pieces snack mix, which is Reese's Pieces, tiny little Reese's cups mixed in with, like, peanuts.
Hold on now. That sounds like a trifecta of delight.
I've had it before. Very tasty. I'm going to give it a solid 3.5 out of 5.
Out of 5?
I mean, 5.
You're leaving a point and a half off?
Yeah,
that sounds like an easy 4.
You know what the perfect candy bar is though.
The perfect candy bar,
perfect
the Snickers bar.
Actually, Take 5. Take 5 is the best candy bar.
Which one is that?
That's the one that's got like I think there's a pretzel in it.
Oh,
yeah, like a full pretzel.
Hold on now.
The Take 5.
The things I learn at this time of the morning. The Take 5 bar. All right. There was one that had a bunch of different candies in it. But listen, all I know is the thing that started this all off is Necco wafers are coming back this month. So if you're a fan of old-timey Necco wafers or you want to try to cheat the toll road, go ahead. But who's still? I don't even think they have those things to throw the coin anymore. You're either going to the iPass or you're going to the person in the box. That's it. It's been so long since I've driven through the tollway without using my iPass that I don't even know if there are still people in those boxes. I know now there aren't because of COVID. And so when we were driving, not only here when I'm driving on the tollway, but when we drove out east, doesn't matter, Ohio, Pennsylvania, there's nobody in the toll plaza. You just use your fast pass or your iPass or whatever they call it in that state, and you go zing right through. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, everybody's carrying hand sanitizer. You saw these horrible pictures of hand sanitizer in your car. It's supposed to be 92 later today. Should you leave your hand sanitizer in the car? Are you still carrying it? Have you changed your habits in the last couple of months? Do you leave the house without wipes, sanitizer, all the pandemic accoutrements? We'll talk about that and more as we get ready to start looking at the home stretch here on WGN. Brian Noonan in for Nick. We are here until 4 o'clock, and then it is the WGN Morning News. That is correct? Yes, that is correct. But I will be here for Nick all this week. 312-981-7200. That's how you get a hold of me. That's how I get to speak with you, which is what I enjoy doing the most during this time. So we're starting to talk about safety precautions. Are you leaving the house without sanitizer? Are you leaving the house without wipes? Do you bring everything with you now? Are you leaving with a little backpack full of things? According to the chair of the Department of Chemistry and Physics and coordinator of medical laboratory science at Monmouth University, it is, quote, extremely unlikely and would take more than just a hot car for a hand sanitizer to ignite. So do not panic. The active ingredient in most hand sanitizers is ethanol. It's the same type of alcohol that's in wine, beer, and liquors, just at a much higher concentration, which is about 70%. That's the potency required to deactivate the coronavirus. So, according to this doctor, Dr. William L. Schreiber, he says ethanol has a significantly lower boiling point than water. It means it heats up to a boiling point much faster, but it also has a lower vapor pressure than water, which means it evaporates much faster at a higher temperature. So there's your chemistry lesson for the morning. It's like Breaking Bad, only with hand sanitizer. So, on a very hot day, significant pressure could build up in the bottle, causing it to rupture, but it wouldn't result in a combustion-type scenario like the picture would have you believe. So it's not going to do that. But since we just said it's ethanol and it evaporates quicker, right? Yes. So can it lose its effectiveness if you leave it in a hot car? Oh, well. A professor in the Department of Microbiology, Immunology, and Pathology at Colorado State University who helped create hand sanitizer for the veterinary teaching hospital said the biggest risk of leaving a bottle of hand sanitizer in a hot car is that it does, in fact, lose its potency. Alcohol evaporates very quickly in the air, they said, especially in Colorado where it is warm and dry. As it evaporates, the relative concentration of the alcohol goes down, as does its germ-killing ability. So, what does that tell us? I don't know. It tells us your car's not going to explode if you leave hand sanitizer in it. It tells us that. That's good news. It also tells us that it may not be as effective if you leave it in the hot car. So later today, when it's 90-some degrees, take your hand sanitizer out. Now, here's a simple trick to check if your hand sanitizer is still effective. Look at the viscosity of the sanitizer in the bottle. I love that word, viscosity. I always think of an oil commercial. It should be pretty thin, move around the bottle easily, and dry relatively quickly after it hits your hands. But if it becomes thick or takes longer to dry when you use it, then it's time to replace it. So there you go. Look at that, Tom. We're passing on valuable information here in the wee hours of the morning. Learning about alcohol viscosity, hand sanitizer, and all of that. So, you should store hand sanitizer between 45 and 75 degrees Fahrenheit. Should be fine to keep a small bottle in your center console or glove box, provided you don't leave it there all day long on a warm day. All right. Now, I have to change my hand sanitizer behavior. How about you? You're going to listen to this and take your hand sanitizer with you? I've been afraid that I will forget it, which is why I then leave it in the car. But now I'm going to rethink that move after learning this from the experts. 312-981-7200. Take a quick break, then talk to you. Are you changing your health habits? Have you continued to travel with all sorts of sanitizers, gloves, masks, and all the rest? We'll do that after this. It's WGN. Just like you told me. No, I didn't miss the post. I was Tom and I were discussing things. Sorry. 312-981-7200 is Brian in for Nick. I will be with you all this week. Very excited to be here. We're talking hand sanitizer and how much we leave, you know, how much you're leaving with when you leave the house now. You're taking wipes, you're taking sanitizer. Do you feel you are easing up? You know, the first few weeks, the first month of this pandemic, people were crazed. They wouldn't go anywhere. I'm happy to see people are still taking some precautions, still using sanitary practices. But how much are you doing it, and can you leave it in the car? I just told you we talked about leaving it in the car. But Tim is in Romeoville. He wants to jump on. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Yeah, I was telling the person to answer the phone. I've lived on hand sanitizer for like over 10 years. I used to work at the airport, and I had it with me all the time, in my pocket, in my car,
all
the time. And the only problem, it never blew up, it never, you know, exploded or nothing like that. The only problem I had was on hot days, I would go in there, into my car after working all day or whatever, and I would find that it oozed out.
Yes.
It would be all over the console inside, you know, where I would keep it or whatever. But potency, I don't know. It still always had that little kick of alcohol or whatever ethanol is.
Well, there's the rupture thing is, it makes sense what you said about it oozing out, because they're saying as it starts to expand, that would make sense that it would kind of come out. I've had it. You probably have too, where you when it's real hot, you open the cap and it just kind of squirts right out at you.
Yeah, and then you have the kind where you have a little pump on the bottle, and I don't know, somehow it opens up the gap or whatever, and like I might have a half a bottle, and I go in there and I don't have hardly anything left, but it's all gooey on the inside of my console, you know. That was the only problem in the summer.
Yeah, well, listen, at least your console is germ-free, so that's good.
That's true. It wasn't hard to clean up, you know, but...
No.
Yeah, it's not dangerous, nothing. As a matter of fact, I had that and Mountain Dew is what I kept to not get sick. I haven't been sick for like 15 years.
Hand sanitizer and Mountain Dew.
That's it.
Listen, I like it. I haven't, it hasn't been sourced out, but I'll take your anecdotal evidence and just figure a little hand sanitizer and Mountain Dew and you keep going.
The Mountain Dew has lemons and limes like you would have for, like, you know.
Sure.
The vitamin C, and then the hand sanitizer, you know. It always, I have one other antidote that nobody really kind of cared for, but it never failed me, was I would always put a little dab on the inside of my nose and then take a big, big breath. And it was my idea was that it killed the germs that was right there. And when you kind of sucked it back in, you know, most people, when they have a runny nose,
yeah,
they always go like that.
Right.
You know, so I figured it killed the germs going all the way down. So when it came back up, they were already dead. So maybe that's what helped out, too.
Wow. Tim, I got to tell you, this medical advice, I'm digging it. I'm not sure I'm going to follow it, but I'm digging it.
It worked. try it in the winter. Try it in the winter. You got a runny nose?
Yeah.
Dab it on your nose. Take a big breath. I tell you what, it'll either dry it up, but it'll stop that runny nose.
All right. Tim, thanks for the call.
You bet. Have a good one.
You too. Tom, you gonna do that, put a little hand sanitizer up your nose?
He's changed my life.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can't believe I was so dumb not to be doing that before.
Listen, I'm a fan of Vicks VapoRub, a little under the nose when you're all congested. That's fantastic. And I know people put stuff on their feet to clear their nose up.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't get it, but people swear by it.
Um,
You put some, what, vapor rub on your feet and put socks on, and that's supposed to clear out your head.
Yeah.
And it seemed, that doesn't seem possible because the two are very far apart.
Well, the human body is a strange thing, and there have been so many home remedies over the years. Actually, I don't know if you saw this story in Ireland. There was a town in Ireland where a local kind of folk remedy was to go, and if you were sick,
right,
you would go to the local church and get soil. I want to say from somewhere on the church grounds, and put it under your pillow.
Okay,
and it would stop you from getting sick.
Really,
it would prevent sickness. Later, a microbiologist went and analyzed the soil because she heard about this kind of rumor, this old wives' tale.
Like, yeah.
You take the soil from the church, you put it underneath your pillow,
okay,
and it cures and stops you from getting sick. As it turns out, there was a microbiological whatever, I don't know what the word is, but there was a culture in there. Similar to like a penicillin that was in the soil. Okay. So when they put it underneath their heads when they slept, they would breathe in this culture that would work as an antibiotic.
Huh.
So
that's amazing.
It's behind every kind of folk legend, old wives' tale, urban myth, what have you. Sometimes there's a kernel of truth.
Right.
There's a little bit of something that might actually be fact that can actually be super useful.
Well, there's if you you see stories of these people who live in remote villages in the mountains somewhere, and they're living to be 100, and they're not taking big pharma stuff.
They don't know what they're living on. Silver in Nepal, you know, it doesn't happen.
You know, they're not like me scouring the internet, running around everywhere trying to find my emergency because now everybody wants to boost their immune system.
It's that stuff's poppycock.
I don't know,
dude. It's balderdash.
I don't know, other than the fact that I've been taking it for years and I am almost never sick. Never.
It's all that I think a little bit of mind over matter. I think a good attitude helps.
I don't know. I'm jacking a lot of vitamin C into myself. I mean the equivalent of 72 oranges a day.
I eat like 5 Flintstones gummies every day.
My immune system is never going to let me get COVID or scurvy. I am so jacked up on vitamin C. I can't believe it. I have sunshine shooting out of just about every pore of my body.
I know, it's blinding.
It's horrifying because you can't tell if it's actual sunshine or some sort of glisteny glaze that has come out. But seriously, I've been taking that stuff for years, and all of a sudden COVID hits. You can't find it anywhere. I found some, and I don't know. I'm a little worried. I got it on a website based out of California, which was fine, and it came. Everything is fine. But I get the notice to track my order. I click on the tracking number. The entire website's in Russian.
Oh, yeah. I don't like that.
It wasn't in Russian when I ordered it. It wasn't in Russian. I keep checking the credit card. It hasn't been charged more than... Oh, I got something happened.
See?
That's because it's not time for my emergency yet. But all of a sudden, I'm like, hey, wait, I didn't order from Russia. Am I taking some weird Russian? But the boxes came. It was good old American emergency. I don't know.
Interesting.
But it was weird. My wife didn't believe me, so I clicked on the tracking thing, and that was it. All right, we're going to do this, and we're going to start wrapping things up. It's WGN. Well, thank you very much for listening and being part of the program. I will be back with you tomorrow at 11, or later tonight at 11 p.m., so I'm in for Nick all week. Enjoy the rest of your day. The WGN Morning News comes up next, and then after that, it's Bob Surratt. Have a great morning. It's WGN.
Serving the Great Midwest from Chicago, this is 720 WGN.